Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, country, and one nation under God. Today is Monday, January 29th, 2024, and we are facing some really tough times. This is definitely judgment year for our country to see if we're going to survive, and there's just a lot of stuff going on. But we will do as usual. I'm going to start off with the American Creed, and also, of course, why we're here talking about this. Because most of you, I think, agree with me. I love my country. It's my government I am afraid of. It's just crazy what it's doing. So let me go ahead and get started on this. We'll cover that part, and then we will get into what's really going on today. Hey, this is, again, the American Creed. I believe in the United States of America as a government of the people, by the people, for the people, whose just powers are derived from the consent of the governed, a democracy and a republic, a sovereign nation of many sovereign states, a perfect union, one and inseparable, established upon the principles of freedom, equality, justice, and humanity, for which patriots sacrificed their lives and fortunes. I therefore believe it is my duty to my country to love it, to support its constitution, to obey its flag, to obey its laws, respect its flag, and to defend it against all enemies. Yes, that's what we're supposed to do. And that's why we love our country, but today we have to be afraid of our government. And with that being said, let's see here. Let me switch over. Okay. Candidate James Judge should be joining us here shortly, momentarily. He is running for the U.S. House, Florida District 12, and he was down at the border last week. So when we talk about the key highlight of what's going on with the with the country today, we can't help but talk. We must cover what's happening in Texas. Supreme Court, with some of our friends up there who seem to get confused on that Constitution, the organic Constitution that they say they're going to, that they believe are going to enforce, get confused on some of these things. And so there was a ruling that the federal government had the right to go in there and cut the wire, razor wire, that Texas put up to defend its border, since the federal government wasn't doing it. And so it wasn't saying that Texas couldn't put the wire up. It was just saying the Border Patrol could come in and cut it down. And so they don't have time to secure the border, but they have time to unsecure the border. It's really pretty crazy when you think about what they're doing. So that was the ruling there, and there's other appeals, and the Attorney General's for Texas, Ken Paxton, is great. So obviously they're moving forward. And then the other was that Abbott wrote a healthy letter, let's put it that way, a healthy letter to Biden, telling him that he was declaring an invasion of his state, and Texas will exercise their rights as a sovereign state to defend or to protect its border and to protect its people. So they are moving forward with that. I don't have the letter in front of me, to be honest. I didn't read the whole letter. I just heard a lot of it being discussed on the news. So Texas is going to do what they're, you know, people don't, as I was reading the American Creed, going over that, we are a sovereign nation of many sovereign states. People get extremely confused on this sovereign nation of sovereign states, many sovereign states. The states sign on, and as they were saying, Texas would have never agreed to be part of this union if they had no rights to protect themselves. So it's just really interesting when you think about how far off the rails we have gotten, how far away we've gotten from the Constitution. It's absolutely crazy, insane. If we were following our Constitution, none of this would be an issue today. So anyway, Abbott's got the showdown with Biden right now. And the other part that's really interesting to this one is to know that We've got this trucking convoy that's getting, truckers convoy, that's coming across. I think it was starting in Virginia, coming across, and it's going to go Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. I believe it's going right across there. And they're supposed to have started it today, but I have not seen the news. I haven't been able to catch up on the any of the video or what's really happening with that one. And I don't know if their intent is to truly have a long line all across the southern border, but whatever. But and it's a veteran who's out there. I can't, again, I'd have to go look at the other info on it. But the whole point is the American people are saying we're taking back our border. Since we have a totally treasonous, derelict, whatever you want to call it, federal government that refuses to do its job and secure this homeland, then we're going to have to do it ourselves. And so that's a big part, and we'll definitely be talking about that today, because as I was just mentioning, candidate James Judge was on was down at the border last week. So we'll get his info, and we're going to go to him in just a minute here. The other thing was, what was that other? As we talk about this, because obviously Texas and the border is going to, immigration invasion, two pieces, is what they're doing. Are they going to try to arrest them? Think about what happened to the Jan 6ers when they were trying to protest. Then, of course, think about what happened to the truckers in Canada. So what is going to be the federal response to this? And then the other piece that people have to remember, or should remember, while it's totally unconstitutional, we know we don't follow the Constitution much these days, Biden, back in 2021, signed on to the United Nations Global Compact on Immigration. So we're letting everybody, we're going to ease, and we're going to help people migrate to wherever they want to in the world, and we're just going to let them do whatever they want to, which is a total violation of the Constitution. He doesn't have the right to do that. But unfortunately, we have, what do you want to call it, an impotent Congress or whatever, whatever you want to call these people. They don't do anything to take back the rights. Our Congress has surrendered so many of their rights to the presidency. It's just unbelievable. It's just disgusting. So there's so many things going on here, but this thing with the border, it's so critical because of whether it's going to result in some type of civil war. Is Biden going to try to declare an emergency? You know, all the insanity of what can happen with what's happening, where Abbott and Texas are rejecting and won't comply with, they're going to take their own actions to secure their own border under their own declaration and under our constitutional rights, because the federal government has failed to do so. And now we have the convoy coming. So it should be, it's going to be an interesting few days here. Dear Lord, help us. And we are supposed to be one nation under God, and we should be, we don't seem, many of us don't act that way, especially those people in Washington, D.C. So with that being said, I'm going to have, candidate James Judge, he's coming on right now, and I'm going to have him give you a little bit of an overview of his stuff, and then we just got a series of topics, you know, the challenges that we're facing. We'll talk a little bit about the election integrity. We're going to talk about the Congress in the same, going back kind of to the Texas thing. Congress is supposed to be the one who takes a declaration of war, but that doesn't seem to follow too much these days anymore either. And, I mean, we have more, these presidents, unfortunately, have been more like dictators. But election integrity, federal spending, smaller government, foreign ownership of our country. China has bought up most of our land, I think, and whatever. And that was all due to Executive Order 12803, or a big part of it. That was a big kickoff to it. No CBDCs, no World Health Organization, all these different pieces to take back our country. And that's what I'm going to ask Mr. James Judge to tell us what he's thinking. And hello, James. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm doing well tonight. Although after listening to that, I feel a little discouraged because we're facing a very uphill battle. But no, I'm actually encouraged and would love to share with you and your listeners why I'm running. And I appreciate you having me on. So, do you want me to just kick things off?
Yeah, please go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background. I know you're a veteran. You did run one other time, but you can give us a little bit of your background and then what your key focus is as you go in to Congress. And I've stress to people, we need to change the culture of Washington, D.C., too. So we cannot keep this uniparty insanity that's going on. So we hope to have a lot of changes in Congress. We need stronger leaders in there. So hopefully you can tell us what your plans are, how you're going to do it, what you need us to do on these key topics. And then we'll open it to the floor when you're ready to have some to take some questions.
Sounds great. Well, and there's so much to everything that you've already said. I think the gentleman's name you were thinking about earlier was Dr. Pete Chambers. We were actually out on the southern border, and he put us onto a lot of different spots last week. So when we do come around to that, he's been the one organizing the convoy, was on Tucker Carlson this past week. Really a great guy, veteran, was a special forces surgeon. He's awesome. So can't say enough good things about him. All right, let's start with me. I was born and raised in the Tampa Bay area. I'm a true Floridian. I think there's a few dozen of us that were actually born here in the state. Just joking. But born
I'm
and raised
one of
here,
them.
there's not
I'm
many
one
of them.
I was born
know,
in Orange County. Yep. Go ahead.
My dad moved here in 1957. And from that point forward, you know, Florida's changed a lot. So, long story short, let's get back to me for I guess my background. Did learn a lot from him, and he was a small business owner as well. But I ended up joining the military. I went to school in Dunedin, actually, where Governor DeSantis went, Dunedin High, and then was friends with his sister Christina. And after high school, I ended up joining the U.S. Coast Guard. I served in a little place called AIDS and Navigation Team Milford Haven in Hudgens, Virginia, cleaning bird poop off of buoys and some other stuff. And I said, this is not – I'm not enjoying this duty station. So I volunteered three times to go to Iraq. The third time I volunteered, I got picked up, and that was 2004. We trained at this little unknown place at the time called Blackwater, and we deployed over to Iraq on patrol boats. Later, Blackwater becomes, you know, super famous in the news. In fact, the week we were there was when the Fallujah contractors got strung up. We also lost the first Coast Guardsman since Vietnam the week before I went. So Petty Officer Nate Bruckenthal was killed when a vehicle-borne improvised explosive device detonated on a boat that was trying to blow up the oil terminals. And that was part of our job over there between going up and down the rivers, boarding vessels that were, you know, transporting IEDs and tools of the trade, trying to interdict them in addition to guarding the two main oil platforms, which between those two make up about 90% of Iraq's GDP. So did 13 months in Iraq and then finished up my 4 years, went to Miami. I went to Public Affairs A School, went to Miami after that. They said, do you want to go to Miami, Alaska, or Ohio? I said, I'll take Miami. And that was my experience in the Coast Guard. It was a phenomenal experience. Did a lot of media relations in Miami. Got to see and assist with counter alien migrant interdiction operations, counter drug operations. We worked on everything from, you know, rescues and plane crashes and Super Bowls and cruise ship fires. And it was a very amazing time to be a young man in Miami and really learn a lot. And in addition to that, learn to work with a lot of other agencies, especially in an area like immigration. And I used to go on television back then as a young, you know, 21, 22-year-old, and I would talk about how, you know, it's our job when I was in the Coast Guard to enforce U.S. law. It was not our job to decide which laws to enforce. If people had a problem with that, they should contact Congress. And we're at a weird point right now where, you know, you see the executive branch has just decided to stop enforcing the law. It's one of many reasons why I'm running. But after serving in the Coast Guard, I went to ABC News in Gainesville, worked there a little bit. I'm a diehard Florida Gator. I'm sorry to the Noles out there. I do root for the Noles every game except for Gator game day. But on that day, I do pull for the Gators. I want the Noles to be undefeated, though, when we face them. But I'm not perfect, as clearly some of your listeners will probably understand with that one. Some may think I'm perfect after saying that. But, no, I just grew up going to every Gator game. My dad helped build the stadium, and love the Florida Gators, love everything about Florida, love being a Floridian. I finished up my college after the Coast Guard using the GI Bill at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, and then got hired with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, in between that ABC, after ABC News, went to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, was public affairs officer for all of Florida except for Miami. Miami had their own public affairs officer. While I was at ICE, it was the end of the Bush administration, beginning of the Obama administration, and it was a look into what was to come. We stopped worksite enforcement while I was at ICE, and that was a shock because a lot of the guys I was working with were like, we're not going to do another thing until we retire. I go, what do you mean? They go, well, you know, I got 3 years left. This is the way this works. When we have a new administration come in that's like this, we're not going to do anything. And I was still young and naive, and I didn't understand what was going on. And I didn't understand how bad things were going to get. But ICE had stopped worksite enforcements. We had one person for the entire state of Florida. We had one person reviewing I-9 documents when I was the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. You know, the documents that you're supposed to fill out that say whether or not you're a citizen or, you know, when you sign up for employment. One person for the entire state of Florida, 21 million residents at the time. That's what we had reviewing I-9 documents while I was at ICE. So following that, I go back to school at Eckerd. Was there, and I got a call from the Office of Secretary of Defense to go to Afghanistan. I go to Afghanistan, worked on the press desk. It was a one-year temporary assignment, and I said, I am never going to work with the U.S. government ever again after seeing the bureaucracy. Don't get me wrong, being in Afghanistan and being in a room with 46 troop-contributing nations, it was truly an honor and a really amazing experience. I worked at the headquarters level and got to see countries working together. You know, next to me would sit an Italian man, an Italian colonel in their military. Commander Pica was the name. But and then on the other desk was Germany, and it was really amazing to see these countries come together and work towards one common goal. But then you would see the bureaucracy that was at play within the U.S. military. I was like, I don't want to work with the government ever again. So I got out, started my – it was a one-year temporary assignment at the end of it, started doing consulting, started working in the private sector, and I started my own PR firm doing marketing and media relations. And I figured I was done with the government. Then a few years go by, my company's doing great, and I thought everything was, you know, hunky-dory, and then 2020 comes along. And I'd already been involved in politics at that point. I was helping with a local mayoral race. And as things are coming about in 2020, March happens, and we literally March, St. Patrick's Day, was the election in Clearwater where Mayor Frank Hibbard won the race. And it was that day they decided to start the shutdowns, right? Like, I mean, we were kind of scratching our heads going, they can't shut down St. Patrick's Day, but they're telling people you can't, you know, you shouldn't see anyone, don't hang out. And I'm, well, this is crazy. So I think a couple days after that, it was like March 20th or 21st, I did my first podcast. And I did this podcast, and the purpose of it was really to tell people, hey, I do marketing and PR for a living. Make sure you have an online, you know, presence if you're a small business owner. We don't know what's going to happen. And then as I'm listening to them and listening to Fox News and all these different outlets, and I'm going, these people are talking about, like, shutdowns forever. And I'm like, for weeks. And I'm like, this is insane. We cannot do this. So my next podcast, the very next day, I said, you know, and I didn't have any followers at that point. It's just my friends that were listening. I started a page with zero followers. And I said, we cannot shut down. No one is asking what's going to happen to the global supply chains, to logistics, operations around the world. How many people are going to die by stopping this, like by just stopping commerce? How many people are going to die in third world countries because, you know, this happens? Then, you know, you watch what happened in hospitals where they kicked out loved ones and family members and volunteers, and they put a lot of stresses on a system that was already stressed. And no one was asking the question, well, when you remove these people, what happens? And what happens is you see a lot of deaths that occurred due to negligence, deaths that occurred due to people being overworked. Yeah. There was no one there to advocate for those loved ones. I saw it firsthand when I was in the hospital with my dad. He never had COVID, but I got to see firsthand how the hospitals were making these mistakes. And my podcast quickly grew from zero followers in a month and a half to over 13,500 followers. And we were talking about things that no one else was talking about. We were talking about, we were addressing questions. We were just asking questions. That's really all we were doing. And by asking questions, I was getting in trouble where I started getting, you know, I didn't know that it was real at the time. I'd heard people talk about shadow banning. And you know, one of the things that I said, hey, why aren't we listening to this guy, Dr. Leonidas, out in UCLA? He's talking about how it's not going to be that bad. They looked at the cruise ship models, and, you know, you weren't allowed to ask questions. It was just shut up and listen to the science, right? I would reach out to my friends in the media, and I was like, hey, we need to ask these questions. And they would go, no, you need to listen to the government. I was like, you never listened to me when I was the spokesman for the government. Like, what are you talking about? You need to listen to the government. You're supposed to ask questions. Like, the first rule in journalism is if your mother tells you that she loves you, go get a second source. I mean, you're not supposed to trust anyone. And journalists started abdicating their responsibility to inform the audience, to tell the truth. And then they started that a long time before that. But this was really when it just totally hit the fan. And then the George Floyd stuff happened, and I saw cities set on fire because a guy refused to follow the law, and not a single person on television at the time, no one on Fox News, no one said what should have been said was, what happened? What did Mr. Floyd do? Was, you know, he passed counterfeit currency. He was drunk. He was high on meth and fentanyl. He had a lethal dose of fentanyl in his system. Now, we didn't know all those details, but we certainly could have said, hey, we need to see what exactly happened here before we place judgment. If your listeners haven't seen The Fall of Minneapolis, I would highly recommend that they watch it. TheFallOfMinneapolis.com. It exposes what happened there. But we were asking these questions, and all of a sudden, I get shut down. My audience at that point was probably about 15,000 or 16,000. And that's on a regular daily basis. Like, we were getting 20,000, 30,000 views a show. I was doing it on Facebook, on YouTube, and everything gets shut down. I'm accused of inciting violence. Now, I worked in radio as a teenager growing up. Everything that I said was within the legal limits of what the FCC would allow. I would never have been kicked off terrestrial radio in the United States for what I said, for the questions that I asked. But because Facebook didn't like it, because of YouTube, I was kicked off, and I said, this is crazy. So now I start calling my friends in the media and a congressman's office, and I say, we have to do something about this. And, you know, the media said, no, you have to listen to the science. No, you're not allowed to say that. And then the congressman's office said, well, you know, Facebook has the most lobbyists of anybody in Washington, D.C. And I said, what is that supposed to mean? Like, why does that matter at all? Like, we should be asking questions, right? Again, I mean, I guess I was still naive even up until this past couple of years, and I'll explain why. So as all that's going on, I'm getting more and more frustrated. And finally, later that year, I think it was August, we see the failed pullout from Afghanistan and the disaster that that became. And I, it was really at that point that I was really upset about all that I had seen. Out of the businesses that I represented, I had 22 clients. We went to 6 clients. I saw 7,000 people laid off across 50 businesses that are underneath those 22 clients that I once had. And I was like, this is insane. Like, all because, not because of an act of God, but because of acts of stupidity by politicians and elected officials. And, you know, if you, in Florida, they closed down boat ramps. Of all places, you couldn't go out on a boat by yourself. I was talking to Tucker Carlson about this. And he said he was out in Cayo Costa State Park fishing by himself on a boat. And he was approached by law enforcement. And they said, look, you know, we hate to do this, but we have to ask you to go home, and you can't be here. And he said, what are you talking about? They're like, yeah, well, there's a pandemic. He was like, I'm out on a boat by myself. Like, how much more distant and socially distant can you get? Nothing made sense. You know, Gretchen Whitmer, her husband was allowed out on a boat, but, you know, you couldn't go to Ace Hardware. You know, seeds were off limits. There's all sorts of, like, just the things that were going on were crazy. You could go buy lotto tickets and alcohol, but you couldn't buy, you know, other necessities. It was, we just saw nothing made sense. And I was like, I'm going to run for office. If anyone, that demonstrated to me that anybody can literally run this country, and anybody could run it better than the people that were running it at the time. As that whole thing unfolded, I was also trying to bring back a Coast Guard cutter, the cutter that I had served on. Before it went to Iraq, it was stationed in Sandy Hook, New Jersey, and that cutter was actually the on-scene commander for the largest water rescue in world history when 500,000 people were evacuated from Lower Manhattan on 9/11. The Coast Guard cutter ADAC was the federal on-scene commander, and that ship played a historic role there. It was also on scene for TWA Flight 800. It was down in the Florida Straits interdicting drugs. It was also over in Iraq. And it captured the very first enemy prisoners of war in Iraq when an Air Force AC-130 gunship blasted an Iraqi patrol boat. I had worked on, you know, doing everything on my part to bring this cutter back and turn it into a museum to really pay homage to the Coast Guard and the history of the men and women of the Coast Guard and tell the story. A lot of people don't even know the Coast Guard, you know, has been to war, let alone every single war that the U.S. has ever been in since its inception in 1790. And as I was trying to do this, I just kept hitting roadblock after roadblock. Like, this is a bipartisan thing. Like, it didn't need to be controversial, but the Biden administration couldn't get out of their way. And in doing this whole thing and figuring out how hard it was, what was that?
Well, go ahead and finish the sentence, so I got a question for you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, after seeing how hard it was for them to do something that was so simple, I wasn't asking for a single penny. The ship was going to be sent to Indonesia, which is the number one Muslim population on planet Earth, by the way. They were going to send a 9/11 war prize over there. I guess they're not supposed to say that anymore. But the truth of the matter is, like, this is a little bit crazy. They were going to do this, right? And I was like, here's an option. We're going to – and the Coast Guard called to offer me a different 110, and I said, you guys give that one to Indonesia. I'll take the historic one. I was going to pay to transport it back. I had talked with Tunnels to Towers and a few other nonprofit organizations, and they had said, yeah, we'll contribute the funds, and I had a place to bring it. We were going to make it a museum in the Tampa Bay area. It was a really cool thing, and the government couldn't get out of its own way. I said, you know what, like, all these different – experiences that I've had, I'm like, I'm going to run. I want to have a voice in these things. I want to remember when they told us that the cities being set on fire were peaceful, prayerful protests? I wanted to be the voice opposing that. And I was I was trying to oppose it, and then they shut me down, and I was like, this is crazy. And then my congressman at the time, Congressman Bill Arrakis, was blaming law enforcement. Like, he posted posts on social media. Everybody was blaming law enforcement. It was crazy. And that was another thing. Like, I saw the traditional rules being broken. You saw the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Tampa Bay Rays come out and say, oh, these murders, first of all, they're not an expert law.
Well, let me ask you here real quick. First off, the media is the virus, okay? If we had a true the freedom of the press, how it was intended, it was obviously not being used. And we had a true, clean freedom of the press, they would have been reporting all the stuff the way, and all so much would have been different. But so during the COVID thing, came out to be the media is the virus, and they really are. Unfortunately, the mainstream, lamestream media is truly an enemy to this country. But I got to ask you one question as we go on, because this, I think, is going to I'm curious as to you've obviously had an awakening and a different opinion of what you were taught to think about this country and what it stands for versus what the craziness of what government is really doing. I'm kind of curious, two parts here. When did you finally learn a little bit more about what Agenda 21 is, the New World Order, the One World Order? And when you think about what happened with COVID, this is my take, and we've talked about it many times on this show, and it's probably, if you weren't there in the beginning, you're probably there now, was that COVID was all about taking down Trump, and the whole reason they were so, you know, Obama was out there, he got the show started, he definitely was not the first one in when it comes to this New World Order. The Bush clan and a bunch of others had major parts in it, but Obama got a lot of things started, moving in refugees into different areas in the country, planting them so they took over local governments and things like that. And Hillary Clinton, as I see it, this is my opinion based on what I've known and studied on this stuff, she was going to be the one who finished it off. And they had the system rigged. They had the machines all rigged, and they just – but they had to have it tweaked. They didn't want it to be too obvious. They didn't want her to win by too much because it would look a little bit crazy. But they never thought that Trump could bring in the volume he did. So they didn't, and that's why she just couldn't believe it. No, there's no way he could have won. No way, not when we rigged the system. My opinion. And so Trump was in there, and Trump was derailing everything they were doing on the Agenda 21, which is now called Agenda 2030, and the New World Order, the One World Order, the World Economic Forum, all this other mess. And
sure.
So they had to have this plandemic. It wasn't a pandemic. It was a plandemic. So when did you start to when did the lights go off of how bad this really is, that they're really trying to take over our country?
So, well, a couple things. One, I had already kind of been looking at Council Foreign Relations and World Economic Forum. So back in 08 when I was working at ABC News at the affiliate in Gainesville. So there were people in the newsroom that were conservatives that we were talking about, fellow conservatives that were talking about some of this stuff. I don't think that any of us thought pre-COVID how I don't want to say it wasn't serious. We always like, well, this is, you know, I guess we just, if you would have told people pre-2020 how things were going to be in 2020, I don't think anyone would have believed that it would have gone, maybe like a couple people, and they would have called them 10 hat people, would have believed how crazy things were going to get, right? As for, so I started looking at some of that stuff way back when, but, you know, you hear it have different names for it, like New World Order, there's a lot of different things that it's been called, and there's certainly a move towards a one-world government, and you can see that, and there's, you know, the way that they've manipulated American history, and they've made us look evil, and they're trying to say, like, anti-colonialism, all this stuff, and no one, there's a whole agenda behind there, and we should talk about that, but it was a while ago. However, I'll say on the other part, I knew immediately that the media was going to use COVID as checkmate for Trump, and I was talking about that on my show. We called out that we were going to be forced to wear masks before that happened. I went to Bass Pro Shops and did a funny little bit where I bought the fishing buffs, right? And I was telling the audience, I actually did a joke, and I put a trash bag on my face, like, this is what they want you to do, right? But I put on the fishing bus. It was like, you know, they're going to want you to do this. And it was funny because I saw a woman go to Bass Pro Shops while I was standing in the line, because they would only allow 10 people into Bass Pro Shops at a time. And they had a line, and we had to be 6 foot apart, and they were like, it was crazy. And she walks out of Bass Pro Shops. She's got the mask on, and she's got the yellow kitchen gloves on, and she walks out to her Jeep Wrangler, and she opens the door with these gloves on, and she reaches in and grabs a cigarette out, pulls the mask down, puts the cigarette up to her mouth with the gloves on, and lights the cigarette. And I'm just kind of laughing at him. I'm like, this is a respiratory virus. And she's like, just touched everything in the store, and now she's going to go to the whatever. All right, sorry, I digress about that. But yeah, when it first happened, like, I knew, like, you know what, this is checkmate for Trump, because no matter how he responded to it, they were going to take him down. Trump did something that traditionally was a golden rule that had been maintained forever between politicians and the media, which was you don't pick a fight with a guy who buys his ink by the barrel and his paper by the ton. And that had been, you know, a long rule that people don't usually go after the media. You know, you can go after the intelligence community, and go after all these. Trump went after everybody all at once. And the minute that COVID happened, which, you know, I first of all, I agree it was a pandemic. We had early in 2020, I had shirts made that, you know, the Judge Show, and it was Scamdemic T-shirts, right? We had kind of come up with that name at the time. And I said, you know, they're going to use this to take him down. It doesn't matter if he shuts down the country. If he does, they're going to say he shut it down too late, or they're going to blame him for saying that he shouldn't have shut down the country. If he – everything that he did from that point forward, it would not have mattered. It was their way, and the media took over because – and that's what I'll be honest with you. I believe it was way more than just a human situation. I believe there was some spiritual warfare going on there. I believe it was totally demonic. I've done strategic communications and media relations my entire career, and I've never seen that coordinated of a strategic communications response where everyone was on the same sheet of music from a press standpoint. And one other note on the press that I want to hit on for a second, that I think you raised a valid point, and the Bible talks about it. The Bible talks about it's not money that is the root of evil. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil. And the media has become, like everything else, a total business. And their entire responsibility is to their shareholders. They no longer have a duty to inform the public. And I'm saying the way that they look at it today, the people that are in charge. They're not They're not looking at it the way that people were back in the 60s, where they felt a real duty, a patriotic duty to inform the public. Today it is all about profits and returning profits to their shareholders. And as long as eyeballs are glued to the TV, they're going to put something on there. It's entertainment television. They do not care about actually delivering anything And that goes for every media outlet out there, every cable news station out there. There's very few that are actually good at what they're doing because I'm not good at what they're doing, but they are good at delivering real objective journalism these days because everything is about eyeballs. Everything is about clickbait. Everything is about return on investment. So it's a sad world that we live in. But the media, that was their checkmate the minute that Trump had had COVID. Really, I think China launched COVID as a plan to do that. I think it was, you know, in addition to that, I think there was probably some coordination with Gates. I mean, you look at who has benefited the most from COVID. Your pharmaceutical companies, Bill Gates, and his organization, Microsoft. I mean, the Amazon, all these guys that took in more money than ever before. And what happened?
Let me cut in real quick here. When the Bill Gates and all that kind of stuff, Bill Gates is out there worried about depopulation, and he thinks he's God to do this. And when it comes to the whole Trump and the COVID thing, he's not a medical professional, you know, obviously, and those kind of things. And I deep down think he was trying to do the right thing, but they set him up, and they actually knew a lot of his. His strong will, whatever, to overcome problems. He was going to come up with a solution kind of stuff. He was, you know, the nature of him. And that is why he was so willing to do the operation, whatever it is. I can't think of a name.
When they mobilized all the automakers to start building vents?
Well, no, the vaccine, getting the vaccine approved. And he didn't when Big Pharma took over, and he somehow, how they convinced him that was going to be the perfect solution. And the part that I guess was the most frustrating is because the hydroxychloroquine had been a big success. He knew it. He was talking about it. They told him to shut up because they had to have that emergency use authorization. They could not have done the vaccine without the emergency use authorization. So they could not say ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine were treatments for it. But unfortunately, he shut up because I guess he truly believed that vaccine was going to save the world, and in fact, it was to his demise and to the death of a lot of people.
Well, and
so it's very weird. You
have to look at who was advising him. You have to look at who was advising him, and a lot of those people that were advising him were in on the take. I mean, you look at Republicans, you look at McCarthy, you look at my opponent, Gus Bilirakis, you look at – I mean, go look at who their contributors are. You go to the FEC.gov, you look under its other committee contributions, and you can go see their special interest contributions. Pfizer, Johnson, Merck, all of them have donated to my opponent and maxed out every single cycle. It's unbelievable, and they did a lot starting in 2020.
Well, and that's
the whole
exactly
thing.
It.
And
I mean,
is the sad,
go ahead.
The sad reality is that Congress, and this is what I'm running to go stop, Congress has become nothing more than an apparatus to extract funds from the American Treasury. You know, we're talking about the border, and Republicans and Democrats, I'm so sick and tired of both of them. Now, I'm a real constitutional conservative Republican, but both of the ones that are saying right now that we need a border funding bill or we need a border bill, that is complete crap. We don't need a border bill. We need the executive branch to do their job. That's all there is. Enforce the law. I just got back from the border. Nobody down there needs a border funding bill. They want permission to do their job. Right now, our Border Patrol agents are not law enforcement agents. I had one of them almost tear up next to me, talking to me. It was five nights ago. We were standing in Roma, Texas, looking across the Rio Grande. And I said, you know, how long have you been in law enforcement? And he laughed, and he goes, I don't call myself a law enforcement officer anymore. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, I used to be one when I was a street cop. He goes, but, you know, I don't enforce any laws now. I'm a chauffeur. I pick migrants up that are here illegally, and I take them to a processing center where they can be out on the street a few hours later. Like, that's the way he looks at himself. It's terrible. There's no consequences for breaking the law, and that is something that our nation is dealing with right now. You're watching.
Okay, let me ask you. Let me cut in real quick here. Well, a very key question to this discussion, which kind of ties into some of the other stuff we were just talking about. The fact that the motivation for them to allow this. Now, see, I hear too much on the media where, well, they just want to get these voters. And I'm sure there's a certain element of voters, whatever. But I don't see this as anything to do with voters. I see this as a major takeover of this country where they're planting these military-age men and et cetera, and, of course, the cartels making all their money. But it has nothing to do with getting voters. I mean, like I said, yeah, they'll get a few. illegal voters in there. I don't think most of these people who are doing this are going to, unless they get paid to go vote, are going to do anything. I think it's much more about planting these cells all over this country. And when is the next 9/11 going to really happen? That's the question I keep asking. Are we going to have a 9/11 before this election? Is there going to be something else? Because I really do think we are under a massive attack. And so I guess you can share your opinion, especially with your background, or what you think is this not a true invasion where they are literally planting themselves around this country, along with the help of China and everything else? And as you go, what Abbott is doing is correct. To me, I love the fact that if I was a trucker out there, I'd be out there going with them too. But I'm not, so I can't do that. But I love the fact they're pushing back on this federal government. 25 states are supporting them on it. But where is this all going to lead? And as you run for office, what is going to be the approach to stop it? What do you think? What is it going to take to resolve it? You know, what I'm saying? Because everybody right now, if we allow this invasion to go over, it probably doesn't really matter if Trump does get elected. What is going to happen after that when they have these people embedded all over this countryside, when they have China owning half of the real estate or whatever percent it is, the farmland, land around the military, all this other insanity? Because I really feel like there's a type of war going on right now. What do we do? How do we help you, somebody who sounds like you're on the right page, I'm loving everything you're saying, how do we help you get past this corrupt election system that doesn't, as we talked about earlier here in Florida? Can you imagine DeSantis and company actually are preventing a manual count to audit an election? That is about the lowest of low. So I'm so frustrated because we see what needs to be done, but how do we take it back? How do we get there? How do we get people like you in office to do the right thing? And how do you not allow yourself to get entrapped by some of their nonsense, which, you know, many people can do, but most don't. You know, we have Matt Gaetz and some others, but we know how many of them fall to it, all become part of the garbage up there. I said a mouthful there, so let me give you some time to speak.
Well, even Gaetz, you know, I mean, I like what Gaetz did with relation to McCarthy, but you know, I have my beefs with him too sometimes. Overall, I like what he's done from a conservative standpoint. I like that he doesn't take a lot of special interest contributions, but then he still plays the political game. And that's the part that I think is just so frustrating and I'm upset with. All right, so let's get back to a lot of what you asked about. And I'm happy to get into that a little more. We need to get into the weeds on that one. But how do we fix it? You asked about the terrorists that are coming across. If I think it's coordinated. There was a lot of questions there, so I'm going to try to tackle them all right? In terms of coordinated, you know, yeah, certainly – China and other countries are trying to undermine us, and they have been for years. China, Russia, they're all working. I mean, they all have their own intelligence agencies like we do, and they are all trying to destabilize the United States, and they're all working together to do that. So I think that is for sure that's happening. We know that's happening. But I would probably actually, and this probably not the most politically correct answer, but I'm gonna give it a whirl and just tell you what I truly believe. I think this is so much more spiritual than I think it is spiritually coordinated than I think it is from a government standpoint. Yeah, they're working on it, but why are they doing that? You know, what did the United States do first? First of all, we have the longest constitution period right now that's still being used. But what did we do when we declared our independence? The very first thing that our country did was say that we believe in the laws of nature and of nature's God, and that we're created equal, and that we're endowed with certain rights by that creator, keyword creator, right? So we believe in God, we believe in the laws of nature and of nature's God, and we believe in that creator. And we said that our rights come from God, not government. And we said that among those are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and then we also put out the Bill of Rights, right? And those are not from government. Those are from God, and government's not allowed to touch those rights. That's why it says, shall make no law, shall not be infringed, over and over and over. It specifically says that Congress is not to do that. What we're seeing across our entire country, every single one of these problems, it really boils down to two things. We're struggling with a country that is going back and forth between godliness and godlessness. When you go to godliness, you're going to have laws and justice and equality. God loves liberty. Liberty comes from God. But you're going to have those things because God gives us those to safeguard us, right? Like, that's why we have those laws. And when you go to godlessness or anarchy, you're going to have no laws. You're going to have a nation that doesn't enforce its laws. And the left has done that. We watched cities burn down and the people that were burning down the cities were celebrated, and we had politicians fundraising for them. And then we had some actual peaceful protesters. Now, a few people got out of hand, but overall, mostly peaceful protesters on January 6th, they were taking selfies of themselves in the Capitol, and yet they've been branded as, you know, insurrectionists, which is insane. I mean, but the Bible talks about this, right? Like, in the end times, people raise up for themselves teachers that tell them basically what they want to hear. Good will become bad, and bad will become good. Like, we're watching our country struggle with godlessness versus godliness. That's what I honestly believe. And I think that's because our nation has done so much good. Nobody really talks about all the good that we have done, but this nation, it started because we had some people that left England that were tired of not being able to worship freely, and they believed in equality. You know, look at the pilgrims that came over. They instituted the very first anti-slavery laws. The pilgrims did. In the 1600s, they had anti-man-stealing laws. In the first slave ship that landed up in Plymouth, Massachusetts, they literally imprisoned the crew.
Whoop, just kind of, you're fading up. Okay, I don't know if you lost the signal or the phone.
It should be better now. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yep, I can hear you now. Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'm sorry. So we're not talking about that version of American history where, you know, the pilgrims instituted some of the very first anti-slave laws, or the fact that our nation became the first nation on planet Earth, when every other nation had participated in slavery until that point. We became the first nation on planet Earth to say, you know what, we're going to abolish the slave trade. The first country to do it. And Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution allows that. Like, that was from our godly beliefs. That was from our founders that believed in God, and they believed that all men were created equal. And they were struggling with the federal government and states' rights, and that's a whole other discussion. But at the end of the day, we're not talking about all the good that this country has done. The people that are on the other side hate our country. They don't want us to have a country. They want us to have an economic zone, because countries have a national identity. They have culture. They have a proud history. And the people that are on the left, they hate this country. They won't tell you that, but I honestly believe that they do. They don't want us to have a national identity. They don't want us to have a culture, and they don't like our history. So they're attacking it all the time. And people that are on the other side in these other countries, they're attacking it as well, and they're sabotaging it. So I don't know if that answers your question entirely, but I think that maybe that's oversimplifying it, but I really do believe it's spiritual. And we know that if you believe in the Bible, if you believe in God, there is a spiritual war going on.
And I do believe that, because if we become a nation of what was the Reagan's quote about, if we fail to be a nation under God, we will be a nation gone under, kind of thing. It's not the exact quote, but that was it. When we are no longer one nation under God, we will be a nation gone under, was Reagan's quote on that. And that very much is, as we allowed other cultures, which comes back to a certain degree, immigration, if you will, in that we've allowed people who are atheists and who are Muslims, Islamists, whatever, who do not believe anything in that they're taking an oath to uphold the Constitution that they don't believe in, and yet they're being sworn to uphold it, and then we're surprised when they do the crazy things they do, like the Gang of Four, whatever, you know, those nutcases. So we're surprised when they do. So, well, wait a minute. When we said you didn't have to believe in God or be a Christian to be on the Supreme Court, did that not undermine everything you said you just believed in? So that was all, but that was all under the guise of a free society, freedom of belief, freedom of religion. But that's where the people don't understand the culture. You can't always mix. You cannot be an atheist and a Christian at the same time, and that's what people were trying to do.
Because of our
generosity and our openness, we allowed people to come in and take over this culture.
Well, and when we talked about, and when the founders talked about freedom of religion, They were really talking, and I know people are, especially on the left, are not going to like that I'm going to say this. They were talking about freedom of Christianity, that they all believed in God. 93% of the founders were Protestant or Catholic, and the vast majority were Protestant, but some, about seven per, or a few of them were Catholic. 7% were deists, which I would argue by today's standards, they were probably more Christian than anything. But every one of the signers of the Declaration and of the Constitution believed in God. And when you believe that that's where your freedom comes from, that's a totally different world than the people that are the atheists today and that believe in other gods today, and the people that even want to go to the crazy extreme and say they want to worship Satan. Satan's certainly not God, and that freedom is not guaranteed by the Constitution. And I'm sorry if people may dislike that I say that, but you don't have a freedom to go worship Satan in this country. I mean, you can do your own thing as an individual. Like, nobody can stop you from doing that, but we're not going to put Satan's statue in the Capitol. That's crazy. And I applaud the gentleman that went to Iowa and tore that thing down. Like, it's unacceptable. We are a good nation. We stand for good. And I'm not saying anybody has to be a Christian. Like, certainly I want to lead people to the Lord. But there's certain biblical values that our founders believed in that are important to teach as part of our culture, because that is what has allowed for equality and prosperity. And it hasn't just stopped here in America. It's spread all over the world. Yes, there's still problems today. Yes, we can still do better. But the ideas that our founders had have just echoed across the world, and you've seen an amazing impact because of that. So it's no wonder that evil is constantly after the United States, because we have been that city on a hill. But anyway, so that's
let me ask, I'll throw one little comment in there as you're talking about that, because many of us believe education has been a big part of the problem we have, and so much of it began when they took God out of schools. I mean, teaching the Bible at one point was actually passed by Congress. So if you want to think of when the element was already out there, but when it really started to take hold, when we take God out of schools, we do this Common Core, we do all this brainwashing, we don't teach history, we don't teach the civics of any, that type of thing. So that was the decline of the culture, and the brainwashing started. And little by little, it's all led to where we are today.
Well, what's amazing about that, so Benjamin Rush, who signed the Declaration and the Constitution, one of the founding fathers, he was the first treasurer of the U.S. Mint. He also was a surgeon general, and he is called the godfather of public education in America. And he said, public education in America serves three purposes. The first is to teach citizens to love God. The second is to teach citizens to love their country. And the third is to teach them to love their family. And he purposely put country second, because if you don't have a good country, you won't have a good place to raise your family. If you want to love your neighbors, you have to take care of your country. What's wild is that the Bible was the first American textbook. You can't argue that. It really was. It's what they used in the 1600s all the way up until they ended up using the New England Primer. And the New England Primer was based on the Bible. All the lessons in it are biblical. As that gets removed and we start removing biblical values from society, you have seen a downward progression. It's just the way it is. And, I mean, I know there are people out there that are going to – even Republicans out there that are going to argue with me and say that that's not the way that it is. I'm sorry, it is. Go back and look at our history. Go look at the top of the Supreme Court. Moses is holding the Ten Commandments at the top of the Supreme Court in the United States of America, because our legal system is based on Mosaic law. Judeo-Christian values are intrinsic to our American ethos, what we believe, and when you bring in other cultures, which, again, I'm okay with people coming here, especially if they want to assimilate, and they need to do it in a legal fashion, but when they come here, like, they need to understand where our value system comes from, where our beliefs come from, because if we're going to maintain this for future generations, that's where it comes from. And, you know, now we have a society, and this is where it frustrates me. I do have some positive, encouraging news, but that thinks that, you know, well, you can't have God in school, you can't have God in government, you can't have God at work, you know, you can only have God on Sundays, and only for a couple hours on Sunday, right? You can't bring him anywhere else. You can't do it for anyone else. And I think to myself, I'm like, well, that's not much of a God. Like, that's a hobby. God should be God of your entire life. Like, he should influence the way you vote. he should influence the way you conduct your bedroom activities, your break room, your everything, like at work. Like, you should, God should be influencing your entire life. And again, that's personal between everybody, and I would encourage them to read the Bible, encourage them to have that relationship with the Lord and let that be for them. But when you eliminate God from all those things, you're going to see a society that is struggling with godlessness, and that's where we're at. We're seeing the effects of that. There are consequences for both. There's positive consequences for turning to God, and if you read the Bible and you see what happened to the Israelites every single time they turned away from God or they turned back to God, there's positive consequences for turning back to Him, and there's negative consequences for turning away from Him. And we're just suffering the results of that. And I hope and pray that our country will turn back to God. I think, even though I'm not really a big fan of this continuing resolution that just got passed, Mike Johnson is a really good Christian man. And I think he came out of nowhere. I think that was an answer to prayer for a lot of people. And I am optimistic. Like, the one thing that can save this country is prayer. That is, God can save this country. If enough people repent, turn from their wicked ways, and pursue God, like, this country can be saved, because I'm a believer in a God that does miracles, you know? So I think that it's certainly possible. Now, having said all of that, people are going to go, oh, he wants a theocracy, all that stuff. I do not want a theocracy. That's not what I'm advocating for. I actually want less federal government. I want to clarify that real quick. I really want less federal government. I want to go back to what the founders envisioned. I just talk about this stuff because it's what will influence my decision-making process. We need good Christians that are in office, or people with good biblical values, that will not be willing or eager to take bribes, which is what lobbying is, which is what special interest contributions and PAC contributions are. Like, I wish we didn't have to take any money to run for office. I've come out and said I won't accept PAC contributions, but we need people that are opposed to bribery, opposed to corruption. We need people that are opposed to lying. And those are the biblical values that I'm talking about that will influence my decisions. But overall, from the federal government standpoint, like, I actually think we should get rid of a lot of laws. If you look at the enumerated powers and what the federal government should be doing, I mean, it's just way past what our founders ever envisioned. The federal government was supposed to be limited, and then everything else was supposed to be pushed back down to the states. And it's interesting, when I was in the military, we all swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. I did it when I served in the Coast Guard. I did it when I served at ICE. I did it when I served in the DOD. I did it when I ran for office. But what's amazing is that I didn't read the Constitution fully. I even took constitutional law in college, but I didn't read the Constitution fully until before I ran for Congress last cycle. And I studied it, and then I started taking a biblical citizenship class, and I started teaching the Constitution now. I actually teach it at my church. I've taught it out of my home, and I teach classes on it because it's an amazing document, and they were so brilliant in their foresight of what they thought about, what they looked at, the ancient cultures they looked at, and how they were going to build this government and make it different. So I tell you all of that because I would like to get back to somewhat of what they've envisioned. There's a pragmatic way to do it that is not it's probably not what some of the audience will want to hear. Some people probably want it all gone tomorrow. I think if you try to go with that, it'll create a ton of chaos, and I don't know that it's I would love to see that happen personally. A lot of the three-letter agencies I'd love to see go away. But I think there's a pragmatic way to do that, where you do it through attrition, you do it through not hiring people when they retire, not hiring to replace people when they retire, not hiring people when they leave on their own. There's a way to shrink it through budget. There's a lot of ways to do it. If people aren't going to do their job, like, instead of a border funding bill, we should be stopping funding of anyone who refuses to enforce the law. If you're a U.S. attorney, attorney general, anybody at the White House, if you're not doing your job, you shouldn't receive a paycheck. There's a way to shave some money off the budget, which is another thing we'll have to talk about, responsible spending. But anyways, I'll let you ask a question because I've been on a rant here.
But it's all very relevant to how we got here. It's Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals and Clark Piven, how you take down a country. For whatever reason why these people wanted to take down this country, we won't try to figure that one out tonight, but over time, they took down the culture. And we've talked so many times on this show about this, taking down the culture, taking God out of schools, and then we don't follow hardly any, the Patriot Act. And when it comes to, and I guess I'm going to, based on what I was hearing you say, I think you're probably in agreement I'm personally sick of both of the political parties. They're both corrupt. Political parties are always corrupt. The Citizens United was a terrible decision. Super PACs are nothing but money laundering for this. And because we lost that core value of anything decent, the money is just all right out there. Many of these people, I'm sure, brainwash themselves into saying, well, it's really good because solar panels are really good and they're really going to help us. So, yeah, let's pass that money on down and play all these games when, in fact, it's their friend who's getting the contract or whatever else. So the greed and power are two of the biggest evils of the human condition, whatever. Go ahead.
Well, and it's not just that. We're all subsidizing it. A Tesla doesn't cost $70,000.
Well, yeah.
A Tesla
they're stealing from us.
$1,000.
It's a scam. Yeah. They are violating the Constitution in so many ways, and yet we're the ones that don't have any rights. The illegals have all the rights. The Patriot Act, which was a Republican thing, which is kind of what I was getting to. The political parties are part of the problem. And when we talk about the election integrity, I want to make sure we get into that first because you're running in Florida. I was talking to you about this, our own state isn't going to allow us to have a manual count to validate it. But what we see happening through the election process, here's a couple of things, and unfortunately I didn't get to really talk to you too much about this earlier, but everybody that's listening who listens to the show all the time knows what I'm going to say here. The key is when it comes to electing a president, because of the political parties, we have no rights. We don't really vote. I truly, especially if I'm a no-party affiliate, I really don't get any say. In the state of Florida, the way they pick the electors, some people refer to it as the Electoral College, but the electors who vote for the president and the vice president, that piece of it, that is so corrupted, and it's all by the political parties. And here's the part that, and if you you sound like you're a person who might actually be willing to take this one on, won't be easy. You won't do it while you're running for office, that's for sure. The political parties are private entities. They are private entities who own our ballot box. There's something seriously wrong when two corporations called the DNC and the RNC own, when they own the ballot box. They have more control over it than I do.
Right.
The other political parties have no say. And you go and look at the Florida Constitution on how they handle this. Who really truly selects the electors? So, you know, I'm going to go vote in the primary. I go out there and I register whatever party it is I'm trying to vote for because I have to. I should not have to sacrifice. I should not have to be part of a corrupt political party, whether it be the Democrats or Republicans or something else. I should not have to be associated with that corrupt organization in order to vote, but I do. That's the way it is today. And technically, in the state of Florida, because of the way they select the electors for the president stuff, they're all doing that outside of us. We have no say in those electors, which is part of the Constitution, and not that we're going to get – I'll let you decide how much in detail you want to get into elections tonight, but when you think about it, as a constitutionalist, have I not been denied my right to vote for the president? Because I have I have no vote for those electors, and I have no vote for that president. It's truly all window dressing for what we do out there. The only thing it really does do is symbol to somebody that, yes, we do have an opinion of who we want that elector to cast that vote for. But because of the way we play games at the state level with those electors, here in Florida, you truly don't have much choice. You really aren't. Whoever is in Tallahassee, and because of the corrupt elections, who gets in Tallahassee? The ones that have the most money with the special interests. I'll stop there and let you say what you're thinking about voter election integrity stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the best way to describe it is that it's a giant business. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's just the reality. Like, this whole thing, it's disgusting. It's a giant business. The Republicans and the Democrats, in a lot of ways, are the same. I am a Republican. I'm a true Republican. I've always been a Republican. I was registered as a Republican since I could vote. I think when you read the party platforms, it would be impossible to be – now, I know people are going to argue me on this, but it would really be impossible to be a Democrat and be a Christian if you read the party platform. They are completely diametrically opposed to one another. in terms of what they stand for. I'm talking if you're a Bible-believing Christian, the way that the Bible is written, and you believe that it's infallible, inerrant, inspired. I don't know how you could be a Democrat and be a Christian at the same time. Having said that, both parties have just, in a lot of ways, I'm just disgusted by the Republican Party just as much as I am the Democrat Party, because a lot of them are just hiding under a veil that they want to pretend that they're conservative or Christian. But at the end of the day, it's all about the same thing. And the agenda for them is raise as much money as possible so they can pay their consultants. That's why, you know, most of the people running for congressional office are going to raise $3 million if they're in the system. If you're not in, you're not going to raise that kind of money. But it's because they get the money from the PACs. The PACs contribute to the campaigns. They contribute to them not only for the individuals, but then also additional money for committee assignments, which is disgusting. But if you want to be assigned to a committee, the NRCC will tell you, oh, well, you've got to, you know, you want this committee? All right, this is going to be $100,000. You need to go raise for me. You want foreign affairs, $300,000. And my opponent has done that. That's where I learned about this for the first time, was his chief of staff was telling me about how you have to pay for committee assignments. I was shocked. It doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution that you have to raise any money for the NRCC and have to pay for committee assignments. I would never do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm a fighter, and I'm really going to be opposed to this stuff. But it's a business. So they raise the money for that. That money, the consultants have to raise that much money because they need their percentage, and then they pay the TV stations, again, which are also opposed to what we're doing, right? Like most of the TV stations out there, if you're buying ads from broadcast television like ABC, CBS, or NBC, in a lot of the Fox plays, but overall, the big three, CBS, NBC, ABC, what agenda does Disney have? Disney is absolutely on the left. They're promoting DEI, LGBTQ, all sorts of stuff, and they own ABC. That money is going directly to our political enemies, and it's money raised by the Republicans and Democrats. Why do they like us divided so much all the time? Why are they not trying to fix the really truly fix the border? Why are they not really trying to truly fix the immigration problem? They don't actually care. The real issue is that they want us this fired up and upset because they know that they can raise more money that way. It's good for fundraising. If they fix the border, then they don't have anything to go campaign on and tell about how bad the other side is. So there's not really like a real goal that they're trying to fix the border. It's a disgusting business. That's really the best way I can put it. And I did not know that till I ran last cycle. So I ran against Kathy Castro last cycle in Tampa. And a lot of people have asked me, why did I do that? I was born in Clearwater. My office is in Tampa. I lived in Wesley Chapel. With redistricting, we did not know where the lines were going to be. And I was of the impression that all Republicans are good and all Democrats are bad. Again, I've been enlightened since then, but I was looking at this going, I was, again, naive, you know, I was optimistic. Like, I want to believe people are the best of intention until, you know, as much as I possibly, I think we all do, right? Like, we always want to see the good in people, and then you realize that it's just corrupt. So I ran against Kathy because I said, you know what, I don't know where the new lines are going to be, and I've known Gus Bilirakis since 2008. He seems like a nice guy, and he does good with constituent services. And I said, I'll run against Kathy. Kathy's a Democrat. She said that, the city's on fire. When they set Tampa on fire, that they were peaceful, prayerful protests, and, you know, she wanted to defund police, and I'm like, I'm diametrically opposed to her. I'm going to go after her. So I ran against Kathy Castor. I won the primary in a landslide against candidates that outspent me 10-1. And I got to face off against her. But in doing so, people kept asking me, why don't you run against Gus? Why don't you run against Gus? And I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, I thought he was a good guy. And then we look at his voting record, and he's 60% as a conservative. Now, if I'm married to the Constitution, okay, if this is a marriage, right, and you're supposed to be married to the Constitution as a lawmaker, if you're only faithful in your marriage 60% of the time, how's the spouse going to feel about that? I mean, I can tell you in my personal marriage, if I was only faithful 90% of the time, she would not be a happy camper, right? So I looked at his voting record, and it was three different groups, Club for Growth, Liberty Score, and Freedom Index, all had him in the 60s. Lifetime scores of 60%. 1 year he's 49%. You know, now that I'm running, all of a sudden he's voting like a conservative because I'm calling him out and holding his feet to the fire. So in a way, we've already won. However, I'll tell you how the other side of that, like how this works. So this past continuing resolution, now Gus is a guy who had typically voted for the continuing resolution, and I've been out here saying, no, we need to shut it down. If people aren't going to do their job, shut it down. Like, use the power of the purse to shut it. All of a sudden, he votes against the continuing resolution. Well, the reality is they had the votes. I guarantee you, and I can't prove this, but I guarantee you he probably went to Mike Johnson behind the scenes and he said, you know, hey, look, I know you're trying to get this passed. I'm telling you why I'm voting this way. Or he had somebody on staff do it. But I know you have the votes. I'm going to have to vote against it because of, you know, I've got a guy primarying me, and he's a strong conservative, and the district is very – it's an R20 district. So my district deserves an Anna Paulina Luna or a Matt Gaetz or a Jim Jordan or somebody who's got some passion and some fire and is going to fight on the issues. And instead, we've got no fuss Gus. And, you know, you also look at who Gus's contributors are. Now, Kathy Castor had 2,200 special interest contributions. Her and Gus went into Congress at the same time. Gus has been in public office since the late 1900s. Won't hold it against him, but, you know, he really has. He's made a career out of it. And he has taken – she's had 2,200 special interest contributions from the same people that Gus has. He's had 3,745 special interest contributions from BlackRock, from Facebook, from Microsoft, from Google, from Disney, from Target, from Pfizer, from Johnson & Johnson, from Merck. The list goes on. He's the only Florida congressman to take money from Bankman-Fried, the guy who pumped $40 million into Democrats last cycle. I mean, the more I looked at this, I'm like, this guy is literally funded by my political enemies. I'm never going to vote for him again. He's told me over and over that he's a bad fundraiser, but the reality is he does just fine fundraising. In fact, he takes money from everyone. So,
well, this
that's
is. Let me comment on there real quick there, and then I want to one last question. I got some people who want to ask you some questions too. This is the thing that kind of gets me when it comes to the corruption of these elections. And if Republicans would truly be Republicans, whatever. I say this all the time, and it's out of, I don't know, frustration. When it comes to the two primary parties, you already know how I feel about the parties, that's what I just said. But when it comes to these two parties, let's face it, the Democrats, probably through their evilness, but the Democrats are the smart ones, the Republicans are the dumb ones. And I frequently say stupid. Between Republicans being dumb and stupid, the Democrats were smart. They ran as Republicans. It's RINO, the true meaning of RINO. I know it because I ran for office in Orange County, Florida, and I remember people telling me, if you would just run as a Democrat, you'd get elected. Because people weren't listening. They vote for a silly party. And I said, but I'm not no, and it was even a nonpartisan race. So to that degree, everybody did get to vote in that one. But the games they play with the Republicans, and that's when I was with the Orange County Republican Executive Committee, saw how scummy they were, and then, of course, learned how scummy the Republican Party of Florida is. So it's like this is a rigged system. It's not about letting people truly – we're supposed to have citizen representation. That's why Jefferson wanted the limits, the term limits. He saw this coming. So it's so disgusting, the games that these people play on this stuff. It's just – but the – going back, the key is,
well,
Democrats were smart enough to run as Republicans. They took over the Republican Party. You truly have a uniparty. And the Republican Party, maybe what it started out to be, a Whig Party, whatever else, I'm not going to go into all that history. But if you were true, if you had true core Republicans in there, constitutionalists, things would be a lot different too. But it doesn't take much, especially if they have the money behind them, for a Democrat to run as a Republican, take over, then they go to Washington, and then they vote for all the Democrat stuff. They vote on the other side. It's just the hypocrisy. People have no ethics or integrity anymore. The one thing I wanted go ahead.
There's a guy who's a part of the Republican Party in Florida. I'm going to say his name. I might even get in trouble for saying it, and I don't really care. If you're not familiar with him, you should. And your listeners should be, but his name's William Stafford Jones. Are you familiar with him?
Yes, the name is very familiar, yes.
So yep. William Stafford Jones has not only used his PACs, he set up, you think he has like 80-something PACs or 50-something PACs, it's ridiculous.
Yes.
But they're Democrat and Republican PACs, and he uses them to fund candidates based on how he wants to win the race. And he literally funds both sides. And he serves in the Republican Party of Florida as a leader. like it's he's also he's the chairman of the Alachua County Republican Executive Committee, and he's also I think he's on the I don't remember if he's on the Rules Committee or something like that, but he is it's unbelievable. Him and another guy, he's got 60 PACs. Let's see. He's chairman of the Florida GOP Rules Committee. So you talk about election integrity, and you've got people that are corrupt, that are running businesses to get people into office, using PACs to collect money and make money, right? This is, again, it's the love of money is the root of all evil, right? And they're willing to do whatever it takes. When DeSantis, and this is what I disliked about DeSantis running for president, again, I'm just going to tell everybody how I feel. I know that this is probably not normal because most politicians tell you what you want to hear as opposed to what you need to hear. I'm just going to tell you how I feel, and that way we just have it all out in the open. And if you don't like me, don't vote for me. I'm asking only for 2 years. If I don't do a good job, then fire me after that. My opponent is asking for years 19 and 20. And I would argue that I think that I should be given 2 years. That's all. But this corrupt thing that they've got going on, when DeSantis passed the law so that he could run for president, which is where I thought he made the biggest mistake. If you're going to pass the laws as a governor, it should not benefit you personally. That's the
correct.
First red flag that went off. And I was like, well, what else might he do when he gets into office as president? Would he pass executive orders that would benefit him? Would he, you know, that was very weird that he did that to me. I also, there were some redistricting issues, which we'll talk about at a different point. But when he did that and he passed that law, he opened up Pandora's box when it comes to election integrity, because we actually had a better system of election integrity before that. Since then, there was all this pork that was shoved in there and all this language that was shoved in there. Now, going forward, you're going to be able to use your condo association ID card to go vote. You don't have to have a state-issued ID anymore. There's a lot of things that people didn't read in that language that, you know, they really wanted DeSantis to get in there, and he really wanted to get in there, so he compromised. And that is exactly why where we are where we are. You've got – and I know that there are a lot of good people that run for office, but then they get in and go, well, you know what, I need to compromise on this. And the problem is that there's only one side that ever compromises, and it's the good that compromises, not the evil. The evil never compromises. They never shift their positions. They always stand their ground. The good people always end up compromising. And my opponent will say, oh, he's Florida's most effective legislator, and he'll talk about how he's had to compromise. And I'd say, no, we don't compromise on our values. We don't compromise and say we're going to put millions of dollars into the National Defense Authorization Act so that our military service members have to undergo diversity, equity, and inclusion, LGBTQ training propaganda. Like, that's unacceptable to me. I would literally not fund the entire NDAA over that one issue. And eventually, you tell people that, and you stand firm as a party, and I honestly believe that that language would get pulled out of there. Besides, we have to balance the budget we have. We have $34 trillion in debt, $215 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and everybody's like, oh, we just need to keep spending more money. It's like, no, we have a spending problem. We spend $6.2 trillion a year, we take in $5. We need to figure out how to spend the money more wisely. We don't need to tax anymore. We need to start getting rid of crazy government programs and start spending money more wisely. We could start, we could start a bunch of different ways. But I would probably get rid of the Department of Education first.
Well, the Department of Education definitely, I mean, and ever since the days of Reagan, they were going to get rid of it. And this is where the Republicans, the RINO, whatever you want to call it, they say one thing and then they do another in the total disgust. But I truly do believe like I said, the Democrats were the smart ones. They ran as Republicans, took over the Republican Party, and the Republicans just stand there and twiddle their thumbs or whatever. So the voter integrity, what you said about DeSantis, I guarantee you the people that are listening in Florida out there right now are in total agreement. We've had that conversation. Totally unethical. His alignment with the Bush clan, too. I don't know what you think about the Bushes, but they are the globalists. They have not. They're the ones that did the Patriot Act. They were the one that George H.W. Bush, the New World Order that he set out there on the State of the Union. He's the one with Executive Order 12803 that sells off America to whoever wants it, and the insanity. And yet DeSantis was standing next to them. John Ellis Bush, is out there endorsing him for 2028. I vote for DeSantis. Everything he has done, he was doing so good, and some of the things he was doing with COVID, and the, what he has done when it comes to the transgender and sex and swimming and competitions and sports, and there's things he said that have been good, but the evilness of his ways, I can't trust him. I cannot trust him when I see him standing next to the bushes, when Karl Rove, the establishment. You're the establishment, and you're trying to convince me you're not a globalist? I'm sorry, that's not true. You will sell your soul in a heartbeat. You've already sold your soul. You sold your soul when you broke the law. Changing the law for your own benefit is evil. It's evil. So why would I ever vote for DeSantis on anything? And I won't. So you're saying, I'm loving everything you're saying. My true question will be how you're going to be able to accomplish it in this evil, greedy environment that we have that has rigged the system so much against we the people, including to the point right here in Florida where they can't even get the House, I believe, did pass the bill to change the language so that we could allow the counties to do a manual count if they wanted. But we can't get anybody in the Senate to do it. And we're supposed to be this Republican, the freedom state of Florida, and how corrupt they are. So that's the insanity with those elections. So beware, right, and I'm sure you were aware of it because we talked a little bit earlier, but they're playing games you won't be able to validate as it stands right this moment if we don't get some people doing something in Tallahassee. You won't be able to validate your vote. So if they go and rig that machine, which we know they can, we're forced to take the results of the machine. That is what they're saying to us right now. And this is supposed to be the freedom state. This is DeSantis trying to act like he cares so much and blah, blah, blah. It's all so hypocritical. We have a bunch of rhinos, Democrats who ran as Republicans so they could get elected, and this is what they're doing. It's really that crazy. Are you ready to take a few questions?
Yeah, and on that, you did ask me one question. You said, what would I do to try to, you know, not become like them, and what would I do to not become a part of that? And I think that this is why it's so important for churches to get involved, for them to elect good, godly people in their churches. I would continue to pray daily. I start every single morning off with a chapter in the Bible at a minimum, and I started that 4 years ago, and it's changed my life. 4 years ago, I was on a totally different trajectory. Like 4.5 years ago, I was my marriage was failing, my business was failing. I was totally headed down the wrong path, and I got serious, turned my life over to the Lord, and it has been, I'm not saying it's been perfect, but it's been a rocket ship ever since. It's been awesome. My marriage is doing fantastic. My business has recovered. Like, my life is in a totally different place than it was, and I attribute that to my faith, and I really do genuinely believe that if you put God first, and it's not a secret. I mean, met a guy, literally, the funniest part is I met a guy at a bar in Atlanta, and he was the one that gave me the advice that I'd heard my entire life from when I went to private Christian school to sitting in church on Sundays. But I said, what's the secret to success? And he said, pray, read the Bible, and tithe. And I think it's so funny because it's simple, but it really is true. And the tithing part is important because it's about sacrificing. And really, when you look at, like, what God was trying to teach the Israelites back in the first covenant, it was about sacrificing. It wasn't the act of bringing a lamb that was doing anything, really, other than it was a sacrifice. It was teaching them to trust and rely on God. And I think that's the same remedy to the situation. Like, how do you not become another person who is viable? That you can be bought and paid for by, you know, a lobbyist or a special interest group. You keep yourself in check. You pray. You read the Bible regularly. You surround yourself with other good Christians that do the same, that are going to hold you accountable. And I think that's the right way to do it. And that's not what our society wants to hear anymore. And who knows? I may not get elected because of that. I mean, I'm going to do my best to win. The guy that did the best against Gus last cycle dropped out of the race and has already endorsed me. And currently it's just me and Gus. And I think the fact that I am way more conservative than Gus, I hope that I can win because it's an R20 district. You know, I am that fighter. Just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean I'm not a fighter. Like, I'm going to go fight hard. But I think that that's really how I make sure that I keep my values in check and I don't become like the rest of them. And I'm not going to take the special interest contributions. When you start doing that, you go down a slippery slope, and all of a sudden you got to answer their phone call, and you got to go, well, you know, hey, can you just not vote on this one issue? And I don't think that being one of 435 members is going to be the overnight immediate fix. It's not. I'm not going to lie to anybody and say that I'm going to single-handedly change our country. But I will have a platform to talk about the things that we've talked about tonight. It'll be a much larger platform, and my goal is to hopefully get more churches involved, get their members involved. Currently, pastors aren't out there telling their congregations
Correct.
To go vote and to go vote the right way. They're worried about the Johnson Amendment and how that could impact their 501c3 status. And that's wrong. Like pastors, if you look at the revolution, half of the founding fathers not only had degrees in theology, a lot of them were pastors. And the reason that we started this country is because the pilgrims came over, they'd been studying underneath their pastor. They formed this country based on his ideas. We're called to love our neighbors. We should have a we need to be good stewards of what we've been entrusted, and we've been entrusted with this country. What did Jesus say? Render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and render unto God what is God's. Well, in this country, who is Caesar? We the people are. It literally says we the people, right? And it's the government that gets its consent to govern from the governed. So we have a duty and responsibility as citizens of this country to be actively involved. I think you asked me early on, and maybe it was on the phone call beforehand, but like how people can be involved. And I totally get the questions here in a minute. I'll even give you some more time on those if we need to. But we have to be involved. And that means, what does the Bible say about that? Well, you should be praying for your elected officials. If I go to the city of Tampa's city council meeting, I don't see a single member from my church. Now, I'm teaching a class at my church now on biblical citizenship, and then it's in a small men's group, and I'm hoping that we're going to be able to roll it out church-wide. My church has like 15,000 members. If we had 5%, 1% of my church showing up to Tampa City Council meetings every week, you know, if we were going to the county commission meetings every week, if we were going to the school board meetings every week, my one church could impact the Tampa Bay area significantly. If I think it's the stats are this, one in four church members are registered to vote, one in eight actually vote. Like, you want to talk about winning elections, you get the churches to start getting their members up off the pews and out actually voting their values, by the way. And that means the black church, too, and the Hispanic church, too, voting their values and not for a party the way that they've always done. You start holding pastors accountable and saying, no. We're going to start making disciples. That's what Jesus really talked about. He said, you know, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I commanded. A lot of people forget that part. It's not a gospel mandate to go save souls. It's a discipleship mandate. We're to go teach other people how to live. We're to teach people what Jesus taught. And if we're going to do that, pastors should be doing that. They should be involved. They should be involved at a political level. And that's how you get our country back.
Yeah, and actually, that's a good point. And after I make this comment, I do want to start taking a few of the calls, because I know you got a hard drop, I think, at 9 o'clock, and so we want to get a couple of calls in here. This was a great discussion. If you're able to stay over after 9, you're more than welcome to. But I know you got a hard drop there. But the thing is, and if you go back and listen to previous shows, and I don't see Dr. Talbert out there right now. He comes on, and we do a lot of the role of the church. The church has been a failure. The church has become a business instead of a spiritual source. And because, like you said, they're taxed. They're afraid. If you think about going back to the basics, if we had the church, if the church was doing its job, the church would be helping out the people. You wouldn't need all the welfare programs. You're a community, which I almost hate to say anything with community because it's common like communism. But the people together help each other. You don't go to the federal government, whatever. You take care of things locally, and that church is a key source. And the key source is supposed to remind us of what we're supposed to be and to work towards that. But the church is absolutely one of the big problems, too. The media is a virus. The church has failed on what their role in this country. The church wants to act like they're, well, we're one nation under God, but we're not, you know, they're hypocritical. I'll call it hypocritical because they're passing around the plate, too, and they're afraid of losing that money as well. And then we won't even begin to talk about. Exactly. Catholic Charities is one of the, if the people involved in the NGOs, non-governmental groups that are funding all this garbage going on at the border and everything else, if the Catholic Church doesn't have a few people who are going to rot in hell, I don't think anybody will. That's my own personal opinion, because what they're doing to support all this invasion and this evilness. They're promoting the evilness. They're not there. I'm sorry. They're not there taking care of people. They're there making money. NGOs all got to go. They're a very, very big problem.
Yeah, they're all. So well, there's a lot of people on the take down there, and you're right on the fact that the church has abdicated its responsibility. And I think it deals with two things, which and we will get to questions real quick, but it's not like necessarily greed. I don't want to say that, but it's their concern about money. They want to make sure, oh, well, they got to pay salaries. It's all motivated out of positive stuff, I think, but like, okay, well, we got to pay for the secretary's salary. We got to do all this stuff. We can't risk offending somebody. That's not what God said. God always said, the number one command in the Bible is do not be afraid and have no fear. If our pastors started preaching like that, to not be afraid and have no fear, if they started telling the congregation what they need to hear rather than what they want to hear, I think their pews would be filled back up again. They wouldn't have the attendance problems that they have. We have just a very fearful society.
And it's interesting you said that, too, because when I was running for office in Orange County around that same time is when I started saying that I don't go to the churches because they're too commercialized. It's a business. I don't want to go to a business and pay money to have someone tell me to read the Bible, and then they don't even adhere to it themselves. So I myself stayed away from the churches. But I also said if I was part of the reason I wouldn't go too, if I go into a church and I see one of my local public officials, elected representatives in there, I would probably have to get sick. I would probably puke because I know they're so hypocritical. They're there as a part of a marketing campaign to try to get themselves reelected, not because of what they believe, because I see what they do. What they do is nothing to do with what they claim to believe in that church. They are doing it strictly as a marketing ploy to act like, yeah, see, I'm a Christian. Just because I steal money from you doesn't mean I'm not a Christian. I mean, this is the hypocrisy of it. So I say that the organized church has gone so far down the tubes to me that I just can't even participate in them. If they decide to start being real churches again and start doing their job, them too, then I would be there. But the thought of seeing, especially in Orange County, if I went in there and saw the mayor of Orlando or I would be totally disgusted and would probably barf in the place because they're so so unethical. They're such hypocrites. Totally disgusting. Anyway, as you can see, I could go on that one for a few hours too. Okay, we're going to go down the list.
Questions. Let's do it. Yeah. Who's first?
Okay, I'm going with Karen and Karen Shawn. We're going to try to make some very direct questions because we've only got 30 minutes left that James can be on the show with us. We'll stay on a little bit longer after that for those who call in and want to listen continuous, and we'll do a little bit of a wrap-up after 9 o'clock, but he's got a hard drop at 9. So if you can try to get some kind of bullet point questions to him so he can answer them and that type of thing. So go ahead, Karen.
Well, first of all, thank you, James. I think I am in agreement with, I would have to say, 95% of the things that you said. My big problem is that people really don't know what we are fighting. And the problem that we have are this group of globalists who, if we don't say, really want the American country, all countries gone, obliterated, not interested, we are to become citizens of the world. We are only to pay attention to the world issues. There are no American issues. We'll knock down your statues. We'll change history. We will do all of those things to obliterate your country. And that's what they have set out to do, and they're doing a phenomenal job of doing it. So the problem then becomes we are facing a group of people who don't believe in God. They abhor God. Their God is sex, drugs, and whatever. And they have no desire, they don't care, they're not interested, they are only concerned with what they can make, what they can do, how much they can steal, how much they can have. So what do we the people do about it? And that's where I come and hit a brick wall, because what do we do? That, to me, is the biggest problem. What's the plan? What's the next step? How do we get rid of these people? What do we do about it? And you hit upon it of money, because I really believe that money is the issue, but what do we do about it? How do we get rid of these people? That's my question.
Sure. Well, thank you, Karen. I'll try to give you an optimistic response. And I don't want to make it too simple. Like, there is a real, I think there's a real solution, and I'm actually working with it. I work with a group called Citizens Defending Freedom. You've probably seen what we're doing with relation to book reviews. We've been working with Moms for Liberty and Alliance Defending Freedom and a lot of these groups. We actually just got one of the really corrupt Soros prosecutors removed over in Texas. Gonzalez is his name. I mean, just a terrible person. He's a member of a cartel. It's crazy what the guy is doing. And he was refusing to prosecute felony cases, but he's a Soros-funded DA. What we've kind of been working on with that group, Citizens Defending Freedom, and then another group called it's called Biblical Citizenship Patriot Academy. At the end of the day, I'll kind of try to tell you. I'm going to try to simplify this, but it is getting churches active. And I know that sounds super easy, but I'll give you the success story. In Plant City, Florida, there's a pastor by the name of Jack Hilligoss. He's the pastor of High Point Church. They started teaching a biblical citizenship class in his church. He ran for mayor and got elected mayor. And then a couple of the church members, they started a Salt and Light group, and they started going regularly to their city council meetings. And they started praying for their elected officials. And they had 300 people sign up to do the Salt and Light group, and they would take turns going to these city council meetings. And by doing so, they took up all the seats so the purple-haired communists couldn't sit in the back. No offense to anybody who has purple hair, but that's traditionally the demo that fits that model. But they'd take up all the seats, and they would just pray for their elected officials. But what happened was it started inspiring the people in that room to get involved. It got people that were, you know, grandmothers that were like, you know what, they weren't originally going to go to a city council meeting and go speak. They just went there to go pray, but they heard things that were so opposed to what they believed that they would get up and speak. And then some of them felt so compelled that they decided to run. Well, what does a church have? A church has a really good communications network. It has a really good volunteer network. It has a really good group of donors, right? It has everything that you need to run a successful campaign. Well, in doing so, they now have the mayor and two or three members from the church got elected to city council. They own the city council now. And what's happened is they got rid of Pride Week. They made it Father Appreciation Week. They have a Family Appreciation Month now. Like, they've transformed their community, and that's one church that decided to get involved. Out of that, it's become a model for all these other churches. And there's 17 other churches that are working on flipping 22 seats in Polk County right now. I've not just seen this. I'm not just saying this because I wish I could tell you vote for me and that's the way we're going to fix that. It's not the way we're going to fix it. This is a major cultural issue that is going to take 60, 70 years to change. And we're going to be at war with this forever. I mean, in the end, we know how it ends, which is a positive. God wins, right? But in the end, the Bible, we're living in biblical times. We're still called to go do what's right. So I'm not going to give up the fight. Like, we're going to fight and try to do what's right and tell people about the Lord and in the process try to make a good society for our families and friends to live in. But I've seen this happening and working in Iowa. I was with former Congressman Steve King up there. We're working on an anti-pipeline thing because of this crazy CO2 pipeline deal, which is also by the globalists, by the way, BlackRock and a bunch of these groups. It's really sad because it was bipartisan. The Democrats and the Republicans work together they're using the eminent domain to seize private land and give it to corporations, not the government. And then they're using the taxpayer money to fund the projects to take these CO2 pipelines. It's insanity. But anyways, I was up there with Steve King working on that, and I heard – what's that?
I said that's fascism. That's the way they take over. Their goal is to eliminate private property, to eliminate people. They believe in depopulation because there's too many of us to control. And they don't want any of us to have private property because then they can't tell us what they want us to do. And they want the minerals and the natural resources that America has. And they have set forth a variety of programs to make that happen. The problem is that they tell us what they're going to do. They tell us what they're going to do to us, and we don't listen. So I guess that's
well,
really
no difference from either party. Both parties do the same. Go ahead.
It has nothing, to do with parties. This is a group of people that are well-funded, and the problem, again, is money. So unless the American people really withhold the money, it's not going to make much of a difference, because all their goal is money, power, and control. And they don't care how they get it. They don't care what they do to go about getting it. They're ruthless, and we are too nice. We're not ruthless. Are we ready, willing, and able to take these people and say you've committed treason? And in the Constitution, it says treason is one of the only things that should be punishable by death. Are we ready, willing, and able to do that? So we have a big issue because the American people are so uneducated. And like I say all the time, our country is being run by affirmative action graduates who can't even put a sentence together. Just look at the administration.
Right.
So it's a big, a big challenge here, and that's the problem.
I think part of that, too, is when we talk about the churches for a second and getting them involved, and I've seen this happen in Iowa, I've seen it happen in Texas and Arizona and Maine and Oregon, like this is happening all over the country. It's not just in Lake Wales. I use that one example, but they're doing this all over, and it is working. And the other thing that is happening with that, too, and especially here in Florida, there is no excuse for a church to not start a school. Every church in Florida, and it's not to be a business, it's just the reality, like the church is supposed to educate. Like that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to teach people how to live. We're supposed to raise people up, to disciple people, right, to teach people. And if we're going to do that, we should have education that is a complete counter to the public education system, which is terrible. And the churches are now, thank God for what Governor DeSantis passed with this law that allows the voucher system, they're incentivized. There's a total, go ahead, start it. There's no reason not to right now for the church to start educating. So I said this is a 50, 60-year solution, and it's not going to ever be over. Like, good is always going to be battling evil, but that's really what we're in, is a battle of good versus evil. But I think I just have to go back to what the Bible says. Like, literally, over and over and over, it says, have no fear, do not be afraid. And that's how I have to live my life, is have no fear, do not be afraid. And so what if I die serving the Lord and serving the Lord first and country second, then so be it. I will give up everything for God and everything for country.
Okay. Well, Karen, if we get time, we'll come back around if you have any other questions. I want to make sure we get everybody in to at least get a question in, because you're running close on the time. Yep. Okay, here we go. This is Joe. Joe, who happens to be running for a state house in North Carolina.
Yes.
Joe, how are you?
Okay, I'm doing all right. Okay, I pretty much listen. There's a lot, but I don't know where to start the question. First couple comments. Well, I think I'm a theology student myself. I believe the most important command we received was to love the Lord with all our hearts and go out and preach the gospel to the world. The Federal Reserve, I believe, and the monetary system, if we're going to get any type of control, and we have to start, I know for the state to be difficult because it's really a national issue, but for individual state legislators, we all have to step up to the plate and address the economy and the monetary system, because the monetary system we have right now is a dishonest, fractional reserve-based monetary system that's controlled by offshore banking cartel. And for us to spend money and use a dishonest bartering system, really everything else is null and void, because this corporation, this de facto corporation that we really, and municipalities that we're going to be elected to, if you're going to be elected, which I hope you are, and I'm trying to get elected here in North Carolina, we're dealing not with a de jure system. You know, it's been hijacked ever since the Act of 1871. And Reconstruction Act. So for us to restore our lawful de jure republic, how do you suggest on doing that? What's your ideas, if you have any, and are you going to take measures or steps to call this out at a quorum?
Well, at the federal level, and I think that I mean, I'm going to just speak on the federal level because that's where really most of my experience is. I worked with the U.S. Coast Guard, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Department of Defense, and I'm running for U.S. Congress. So from
a U.S.
federal
Congress. Oh, I thought you were running for a state house. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were running for a state house.
No. That's okay. Your problem still is valid, and I'd love to address it. We have to get our spending under control. It's out of control, and there's numerous ways to do that. I think that one of the first ways, the government has to spend smarter. I know that, like, people have said this before, and I totally get it. But like when I was in the military, we had every single year we had to spend our funds, or we didn't get funds again. So we had, you know, fallout funding is what it's called, and every October, like, you know, before the end of the fiscal year, you have to spend it. So our office will get basically a call like, okay, the district has XYZ. We've got to get rid of this many funds. We had new desks every year, new televisions every year, new camera kits every year. Like, now, some years we needed all the funds because we'd have a hurricane, but overall, that is insane. We need to incentivize people to not spend money in the government. We need to stop paying government entities and officials that don't actually do their job. We need to make it easier to fire government officials that don't do their job. I don't want to pass any – first of all, I don't know why we keep passing laws. I think it's ridiculous. I think that we have enough laws at the federal level. I think we should start getting rid of federal laws. I know that's probably not going to make a lot of people in Washington very happy. But if we do that, I wouldn't want to pass a law without figuring out a way to save money. So, you know – they might look at me, if I do get in 2 years, they might be like, oh, he didn't get a lot of laws passed. Well, I'm not trying to go there to pass laws. I'm trying to go there to balance the budget. We literally have a massive spending problem, and I want to gut as much as I can from the federal government and push that power back down to the states. You know, the welfare programs, we hit on that earlier in the conversation. That's something that should be handled by the churches and the community. Like, it's when you take Javier Milei, the president of Argentina, he did a great interview with Tucker Carlson. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. He calls out the Pope, and not to offend any Catholics here, but the Pope has been a little bit crazy, this Pope. And the reality is Javier calls him out. This is a Catholic calling out the Pope, and he says, the Pope's communist. And Tucker's jaw was on the floor, but it was great because he's like, what? He goes, he hangs out with communists. He says that we should take money from people and give to the poor. He goes, in my book, that's called stealing. That's against the Ten Commandments. Like, what are you talking about? You can't take from somebody else and give to somebody else. No, when you're talking about charity and what the church is supposed to do, and forget the big organized churches. I'm talking about, like, doing church, what Jesus actually talked about. Having small groups, teaching people the Bible, doing Bible studies, and having that fellowship. We should be doing charitable things. There should, if the church is functioning the way it should be, we wouldn't need all this, these welfare programs that are often abused. Look at the border. You know, when I just got back from the border, not a single Border Patrol agent or the Coast Guard, CBP, any of them that we talked to wanted more funding. Not a single one of them. I said, well, what do you need to solve this? Let us do our job. Every single one. They didn't want more money. What does Congress want to do? What does Ted Cruz go out there and say? And look, I'm a fan of Ted, but not all the time. I'm going to call it when I see it. And I think it's BS that he wants a border funding bill. We don't need a border funding bill. They don't want more money. Like, let them do their job. And if you want to save the money, you threaten to stop paying people if they won't do their job. I think that's we've, for the past how many decades has our government said we're going to throw money at the problem to fix it? Problems just keep getting worse.
I don't think that's...
Joe, this may be... I think this might have been where Joe was going, but I'll let him finish up too. But we talk about currency, of course, central bank currency, digital currency, that's one deal. But also the Federal Reserve. It was Jefferson who warned us about a central bank would be worse than a standing army or a military. So we got to get rid of the Federal Reserve. We got to get rid of the games they play. I think that's what you... Was that what you were going for,
yeah.
Joe? Oh. I'll let you go ahead and add on. Yeah.
Yeah, I was basically trying to get when I said monetary. Yeah, spending. Look, we can spend. We're never going to pay off the deficit. It's never going to be paid off. You can tax everybody 100%, 1,000 times over, and the entire globe actually won't be payable. Just won't pay the interest because it's probably more than $34 trillion anyway. But so, how about auditing the Federal Reserve? If you're elected to U.S. Congress, would you be willing to do something like Ron Paul did, audit the Federal Reserve?
Absolutely. Would love that. Whatever I can do within the constitutional authority, absolutely. If we can audit the Federal Reserve, yes. If we could get back on a gold standard, yes. Whatever we could do to probably do that. I'm a little more optimistic. I think if we spend less than we take in, we can pay it off. I just think that you have to seriously address some of the welfare programs that are out there, defense spending. And a lot of people are not going to like hearing that. But it's not that – look, the spending is just – it's as bloated as it is because of the way that the policies are. The defense industry does not need that much money the way that they're currently – our military does not need the money that they're spending. They're spending most of it because they need to get the same amount next year because that's what they've been told over and over and over. It's all a business. So – I think I'm optimistic. I think we actually can pay it off. I know that sounds crazy, but if we had good people in there that were hell-bent on doing it, we could pay down the debt. And then, two, I don't know enough about it, but anything we could do, I'm willing to listen to. And if it's within the constitutional authority of Congress, then let's do it.
Well, I believe you have a good heart. I believe you have a good heart. And again, if this is the problem, Sally, is most of our congressmen or people like you don't understand our monetary system. They don't understand the Federal Reserve Bank. So,
perfectly, that is exactly, and that's what I would really ask, James, if you could please maybe have a sidebar with Joe here to get in, because this Federal Reserve stuff, it's all private bankers. The Federal Reserve is kind of like Big Pharma on the other side. The Federal Reserve shouldn't exist, and this is exactly what Jefferson warned us about, that we do not want a central bank, so we got to do something to break this Federal Reserve. Because most people think it's part of the federal government. It's not. It's just a central bank, and the only thing the government does is something on the chairperson stuff.
And their goals and objectives
really
are not in ours, are aligned with ours, trust me.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but we used to give China a lot of crap for currency manipulation. And then you look at what we do, and the Federal Reserve is manipulating the currency, is it not? By raising interest rates and the way that they are manipulating things, they're doing the same thing they accuse China of.
Just a suggestion real quick. Do me a favor. I mean, watch the documentary. I mean, I know a lot of people might tell you watch them, but this is very serious. The Money Masters. Watch that documentary, 3.5 hours long.
Okay.
It will explain to you from beginning to end what the Federal Reserve is, what they do, how they do it, and what the solutions are to fix it.
Sure. I will do that. I just took that down on my notes.
All right. Thank
and
you.
Look,
thank
you.
I appreciate your time. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be a member of Congress, you don't – like, there's this misconception, and not disagreeing with you, by the way. I will totally look that up. But you shouldn't have to know everything. It was – our founders, it was a mix of all different types of people, from the super educated to pastors to farmers. It was a mix of all these different people, and it was never supposed to be a career. They were supposed to go there, serve, and then go back to what they were doing. So, you know, there's certain things that I'm definitely passionate about and more knowledgeable about, and then there's other things that I definitely have room to learn on, and before I make a decision on it, I'm going to read about it, I'm going to study on it, and that's definitely something that we should look at. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. God bless. Take care. I'll stay on the line.
Likewise. Yeah, and afterwards, if we can, if you can relay contact information, that'd be awesome. I'd love to see what we can do to help in terms of North Carolina and learn more about your race.
Yeah,
okay.
Sally, give me my contact information if you don't mind after the show. Thank you.
Okay, I will definitely do that. And the other, The Creature from Jekyll Island is another excellent book by Edward Griffin, who explains the Federal Reserve, how they went out there and created this monster. But the... because it's a big problem. And I totally, first off, we shouldn't have career politicians. We'll talk about term limits on another call or something. But you were supposed to be public service, not self-service. Most people that are elected to office today are all about self-service, so not public service. And they should not be up there. And this, when I talk term limits, I start at the bottom. How many years should any one individual be in public service, elected to any public office or appointed to it? Because right now, they start at the local level, they climb their way up 40, 50 years later, and then, of course, they refuse to resign even though they're 80, 90 years old. So that's a whole other topic in itself. But I totally agree. You can't know everything, but the point is, don't go and vote on something if you don't have a clue what you're talking about. Go ask the people who can help. Now, with that being said, I got two more calls.
Sure.
Hopefully we can get these in before you can go.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. We'll stick around for both of them. That's fine.
Okay. And then Cindy, she has a lot of respect for the Republican Party of Florida. Joking. Cindy, please go ahead and have a question for James.
Okay, James.
Hi, Cindy.
It was nice. Hi. I've been involved in politics going all the way back before Clinton. I sat on the Republican. I'm just going to tell you who I am. I am no longer a Republican. I've come to that conclusion the past year. I have worked at every level, and I can tell you, if you were sitting on a phone call with us before the last election, when 22 election, we sat there listening to the Freedom Caucus, and because I'm a Tea Party person, I was invited on the call. And on that call, they told us about their plan and what they did. And the plan basically was is to bring all of you people that are running when you got elected to know what's really going on. All right? Now, one of the things that they did the vacate to the seat. But the problem is that when you go there, you don't have – this is what's going to happen. You're going to be put in a room, and all the lobbyists are going to come in. Everybody shake your hand, and good. And if you ever need any help, that'll be fine. And then you'll find out that all those wonderful things that you want to do, you can't really do them anyway because you're on the lower ground. So in my,
right.
This is after all these years. The only three ways that we can fix our system is we need campaign finance reform. The McCain-Feingold bill is treachery. Treachery. No more donors. No more lobbyists. You're going to run for Congress? You know what? We're going to allow you to spend $30,000. That's it, small donors. The fourth thing is term limits, which Sally talked about. You can't do that, and I'll tell you why you can't do that. Because when you get in there and you want to get a seat on whatever committee it is, and then you get on that committee, because you pay to get on that committee, by the way. You pay. And then you pay again. So you have to be there for years till you finally reach the chairmanship. And you were with Steve King. Ask Steve King about it. Steve King fought many of these issues and understands what the corruption is all about. It is so bad and so corrupt. That's why we'll never see anything. And as far as the debt is concerned, I sat and listened before Trump lost that election, because everybody stole it from him, to three economists sitting around a table talking about the three things that could happen. One was the Jubilee, erase the debt completely, do away with it. Would he do it? That's in the Bible. So I don't believe that I'm doing this. I have, as far as the churches are concerned, I want to make one thought that you may not know about. Every year we used to have reach out to the pulpit, and I would go and do the letter, print the letter out, or speak out from the pulpit, excuse me. And I would do this letter, go to all the churches, put it in their mailbox, follow up with a phone call, encouraging them to speak out from the pulpit. Because the idea was, if they could get somebody to bring it to the Supreme Court, that amendment would be thrown out. President Trump got in office.
Right.
He was in executive order. You know what? I'm done with the churches. I'm a Catholic. I know what the Pope is. I didn't need Tucker to tell me that. I didn't need Millay to tell me that. A traditional Catholic, a real traditional Catholic, and I'm a Greek Orthodox, went to Episcopal, tried evangelical churches. I don't go to church anymore. I read the Bible. If I do go to church, I go to a tiny, tiny little Armenian church, and guess what? He speaks out from the pulpit. They are afraid. It's all about money. Everything is corrupt, from the NGOs down to your non-for-profits. We, in Martin County, where I live, on the phone call today that we had with two other people that are running for office here, we have to go after the non-for-profits. My tax dollars pay for non-for-profits. You never hear anybody talk about that or the NGOs. So to me, it's
right.
Money, it's lobbying, and all of that above. And I think Steve King is an amazing man. I asked him to come down here many times. They ran him out of Washington. He worked on immigration for years and years and years. And it is a travesty what's happening. And you know, I'm a big constitutionalist. I have the Tea Party. I get that part. But we're so far from that now. It's almost laughable that we even talk about it. Because, you know, I've noticed in the last 2 years how everybody's gone away. Wall Builders doesn't talk about any. You know, really, a lot of people have gone away because it's very, we have to be realistic. The reality of it all is we need people to go up there and say, you know what, we need campaign finance reform. We do. That is number one, and get rid of the donors, and then maybe we have a chance.
Okay.
And the people should be going there, and that's all I have to say. And thank you so much for running, and please give us some thought. Thank you.
Okay, did you have a specific question you wanted to ask them?
No, well, if I have a question, I wanted to be realistic, and unfortunately, it's, you know, if you want to, I could probably, I don't know if I could send it to you. I don't know if I downloaded the plan from the Freedom Caucus, but it really, I think that really opened up a lot of eyes for the new people that got elected in 22.
Okay.
Yeah, actually,
I'll forward his email address on the contact so you can talk to him. Go ahead, James. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, you guys can, and anybody wants my contact info, like, feel free. I'm an open book. You can reach out. You can go to my website, judgeforcongress.com, click the contact link. It literally goes to my inbox, and send me your contact info, and I'll get back in touch with you. A couple things. So, one, you're right. Steve King's awesome. Love him. What Scalise and McCarthy did to him is terrible. If you haven't read his book, Walking Through Fire, I'd highly recommend it, or just get the audiobook. It's very eye-opening, and it's very sad what they did to that good man. I actually got to know him through Ted Yoho. Yoho is one who actually explained to me you don't have to pay for committee assignments. He got foreign affairs and never paid a penny for committee assignments. Now, yes, the NRCC will tell you you have to pay for committee assignments, and they will try to do that, but at the end of the day, you can hold your ground, and you don't have to do that. I did meet with the Freedom Caucus last cycle. I met with Gosar endorsed me and talked with Jim Jordan and Scott Perry and Marjorie Taylor Greene and met with all those folks. Byron Donalds endorsed me last cycle. I align very much with the House Freedom Caucus. I totally agree with you that we need campaign finance reform. I was literally talking with a colleague today at lunch about that. And we said, because we were talking about running other candidates, and like I own a marketing and PR firm, and I said, look, we're kind of, I said it was kind of an oxymoron from a business standpoint. Like, we're literally trying to go get good conservative Christian candidates to run for office. However, if they do what we want them to do, they're never going to generate money. And I said, that's fine. Like, I'm good with that. I'm, as long as we can pay our bills, like, I'm totally fine with that. But the traditional Washington person who does consulting wants to get somebody into office, so then immediately as soon as they get in, they go meet with all the lobbyists you just talked about. They all get massive contributions to pay for committee assignments, pay off their campaign debt, and then that becomes this vicious cycle where they're going to keep generating $2-3 million every single cycle. They got to make their phone calls, they got to do their meetings, they got to do their dinners, they got to do all that stuff, and it's all a giant business. It's disgusting. So you're right, we have to do something related to campaign finance reform. I was thinking maybe like $100,000 because of how expensive it is to run a race, even to reach out to people. But regardless, anything would be better than what we currently have. Related to term limits, I am one for term limits. I could argue both sides of it. Like, I understand that we have term limits currently in the sense that people have the ability to vote every 2 years, every 6 years for Senate, and every 4 years for president. Like, there are actual term limits for president. But I personally think that, I've already pledged I'm going to self-impose term limits. So, and I know that some people may not like to hear that, but that's what Ted Yoho did. Again, I look up to him. He's been a friend for a while, and he said he was going to serve 8 years. He served 8 years, and he left at the end of those 8 years. If I can't, for me, this is not just about, you said it too, like, I'm going to be one of 435, and I'm going to be the lowest ranking person on the totem pole, you know, as a freshman the first day, right? So getting stuff passed is not my agenda. I'm going to go fight and try to have a platform to go educate people and get more people motivated to do exactly what we're talking about. That's the real power that you have as a congressman and elected official, is to the power of persuasion and to have a microphone and to make an issue of things that other people aren't necessarily talking about and drawing light to these things. And the people that are currently in there don't want campaign finance reform. So we need to get good people in that do, so that they can go out there and tell other people why it's important and to shine a light on these things. So, but thank
well,
you.
You know,
I appreciate that. Was there any?
We have one more caller.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Cindy, are you trying to say one last thing real quick?
Yeah. Am I muted? Hold on. Am I muted? I'm not muted, am I?
No, you're on.
Okay. No, I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you're going to say something real quick, then I got
to
go to Nathan
okay.
and
I just wanted to
we're
going to
wrap
that,
up.
You know, Grover Norquist has disappeared. You know why, don't you? You know, he was the one, no more taxes and all that. Well, the problem is with that is that he's a big, you know, he takes money from the bad guys, too. He's taking corporate money. You know, we have fascism now. Everybody's in bed with the corporations,
right.
And we don't know it. And that's a big thing to me. You know, Karen hit on that. I believe it's true. I know it's true. And nothing's going to change as far as I'm concerned. Just nothing. I applaud you. I think there's good people going up there. But you see what's happened in the last 2 years. And even if Trump
right.
comes back, it's going to be horrible. And I blame the people. And that's where I am. And
yeah.
I applaud you.
Well,
and I'll be willing to help you.
It's not painful enough for people yet.
No, I think then it's not going to happen. They don't know how the government.
Well, I think
really
it'll be too
working.
Late by that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
Cindy.
And I'd appreciate any support.
Yep. And I will definitely make sure we exchange the emails for everybody that's talking here because we have a lot of information and for specific issues, kind of like the Federal Reserve and stuff like that. Karen's way into the education and also Florida election stuff. So there's, and as you can see, Cindy's with the Republican Party, knowing what's going on there. So we'll make sure that we can all communicate. That would be really good. Now I got one more call here, and I know then whatever you want to say as a final wrap up after that, and because I know you got to drop off. Now Nathan, we're not going to talk about what the Electoral College is. We're not going down that path. Please have a question for.
I will not talk about what does not exist. Listen, I appreciate your faith. I appreciate your boldness. What you're saying is all good, but one thing that I'm struggling with is when you talk about getting the pastors on and the churches involved. You know, the churches, the pastors, it's hard to disagree with them whenever they've endorsed somebody and you go up to talk to them and they're just ignoring you because they had lunch with this congressman or senator, and that is the reason why we have abortion. That's the reason we have Obamacare. We got 100-0 voting for Obamacare when Rubio and Ted Cruz and all the Republicans jumped in front of the Tea Party movement and was saying, you know, we're going to stop this stuff, reelect us and hold our feet to the fire. The abortion policy is, and I get my news from the vote record, the abortion policy is a Republican policy that the Democrats take credit for. Global warming is a Republican policy that the Democrats take it. So I'll give you a good one. There's a lady out there involved in a family focus on the family ministry called More Than Enough. They're helping people with housing, and she celebrates how the government's getting involved and helping them, you know, house people. But here's the problem. Everything the government gets into continues to grow and costs more money. This is my opinion. I'm going to close on it. You pick one church in any major city, we'll say a big one, like First Baptist Orlando, just that one church. If you gave them the task to fix the unemployment in this county, they got enough business people and leaders in among them that they could fix this. They got enough network that they could put a lot of people to work. But we don't need the government getting money from the government to these ministries because guess what? We're going to owe these politicians for what they've done for us. Go do me a favor, please. Go look at the vote.
I don't disagree with you.
What's the question? What's the question?
That, no, that was the end of it. Please go look at their vote records, especially the 100-0 vote records, and look at it, and look at how they ran on it. We had, in 2012, we had all the Republicans in Jack Graham's church, and he was really, really, really close to Ted Cruz, and he just promoted the Republicans. And you know what? They went up there and didn't do one thing that they said. They did the opposite.
Yeah.
There's somebody else hopping on the call there. I heard, hearing some weird, but I heard what you were saying.
I appreciate your message. I appreciate your heart. But I'm saying that this is something, and you know, people don't want to hear me say this. It's like, you know, I sound like the guy that's complaining about something. But listen, I told one pastor who told me I was just a liberal Democrat that I was telling lies when I say that the Republicans voted for Obamacare, and I told him, I'll make a deal with you, Pastor. And I said, you don't have to pay if you lose. But if I do, I'll pay for it. Okay, here's my bet. You prove to me that the vote is not 100-0. We'll go down to, and put it in front of me, but it's got to be the Senate record, and we'll go down to I-4, and I'll pay my bet. I'll bet my life. And whenever a truck comes by, I'll jump out in front of it. And he goes, you know, you're insane. I said, well, I'm willing to bet my life on it. Are you willing to bet your life on it? And then I sent it to him by email, and he just sent me back, Nathan, don't be sending me stuff. I said, okay, keep endorsing them. Keep endorsing them. Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio, who has an abortion record and abortion funding record. You know, I'm not getting on how he has to believe, but he can't. All he's got to do is tell me what he believes and be true to it. I can agree with I can agree with you, but we can get along if we disagree. But we can't get along whenever you lie to me.
Well, it's a shame that it's like that, but, you know, those guys are beholden to their special interest groups. And, you know, when the pharma and the medical industry, I mean, it's so gross when you look at the business of it. Look at what we're seeing with all this hormone therapy and the LGBTQ stuff that's being pushed. Like, here's something to think about. The reason that's being pushed is not because the Democrats just want to go out there and start pushing it. It's because there's actual money behind it. And the money that's behind it, where is it coming from? Oh, Stryker Medical, the guy who inherited Stryker Medical happens to be a very wealthy homosexual, and he is pushing a bunch of this agenda. And the medical industry, which is also a business, surgeons don't, you know, surgeons are in business to cut, right? So if a surgeon is in business and there's a whole new product line where they can start, I hate to say it like that. It sounds terrible. It sounds conspiratorial, but the reality is all of a sudden you have all these new patients that need sex change operations, that need medication for those sex change operations, that need medication to deal with the emotional stress and all the things that happen because of the mistake that they make having that operation. And, like, really, what are we – we're dealing with deceit. We're dealing with deception. We're dealing with what the devil has always done throughout history. It's just rebranded and repackaged in a different way. But it's sad because it's always the root of the evil is the money, and – the money certainly is tied into Washington, and you see Republicans and Democrats that are into it. And, look, I don't disagree with what all of you have said, and it is very discouraging when you think about it because it sounds like we're up against so much. But you know what? We do believe in a big, powerful God, and that God is capable of working miracles, and I am going to remain optimistic because if I don't, well, it's pretty discouraging and terrible, and I don't want to choose to live that way, you know. I love our country, I love our Lord, and I think that we do have, if we turn back to Him, He says He'll bless our nation. So I'm going to continue to go that route.
Okay. Well, listen. Let me go say one real quick thing that I've been thinking about, and then if you can see what I'm thinking and it is important to you, that you got the voice to do something about it. You know, since September we've been having conflicts with Iran because they've got the technology whenever airplanes carrying people, not military, but people, passengers, civilians, they're able to shoot these messages. I don't know. I'm not a tech person, but they shoot the data into the plane's GPS, and then it's turning and going over into these enemy nations, and they're getting shot at. Okay, now that's been happening a lot since September. Now here's what I'm concerned about. We're hearing that in 2026 that all the police officers, and I'm for this, if we got some crazy person driving real fast and you can cut his car off with this technology, I'm for that. But I'm also thinking about Hamas attacking these people, these citizens, at the same time they're flying in with hang gliders shooting at people, and that kind of technology. Could you imagine being on I-4 on the way to work, and then all of a sudden cars start stopping and we get ambushed? There's a lot of people in this country.
I'm not for the kill switches. I'm totally against the kill switches. Yeah, and I think that that is an issue that has been talked about recently, with these kill switches that they're looking at putting in vehicles. And while they may have good intentions, I mean, it's like the Patriot Act. It was sold on good intentions, but it's a terrible, it's unconstitutional, it's terrible, and I don't agree with that. But I appreciate the comments, the questions, and thank you all so very much for tonight. If there's anything else that you all want to say before we wrap up, I just thank you for the time and the platform to be able to do this. And anybody who wants to know more can go to judgeforcongress.com. Is there anything else?
No, I appreciate you staying on a little bit longer. I'm going to keep the show going in case anybody else wants to talk about a few things, but I understand you got to go. Thank you for the extra time. Hopefully you can come back on, and I'll make sure you get everybody's contact information. I mean, we just touched the tip of some of the topics, obviously, but this is what it's going to take. It's going to take someone who's willing to won't comply with willing to die, won't comply kind of thing, to change things. But we the people have to be the ones who are standing there with you, the people such as yourself, to make this happen. And that people have to understand that. Also have faith. It's judgment day, judgment year, and our souls are going to be judged by God, and we're either going to be saved or we're going to be lost. That's kind of my take. But thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And good luck with the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks. Okay, everybody, that was a very enlightening discussion. I love just about everything I heard. There's probably a couple little things here and there that maybe would tweak some of those answers, but very much on the same, I think, as most of us. Anybody else?
I have something.
I think it was very, very important, the issues that were discussed. But again, I really want to hear solutions. One of your callers, there's another female there that was like more or less, I could hear the frustration in her voice where, you know, she wants solutions. You know, we're sick and tired of the sidestepping and we want real hardcore solutions that are going to give us results, and we want them right away. We're tired of the gridlock. You know, there's no reason why we can't solve a lot of these problems. It's common sense, a lot of them. You know, so I just don't see what we got to stop this.
Well, the ultimate answer is we have to clean out the Roto-Rooter, clean out the cesspool, which I finally heard someone actually call on one of the shows. It was probably Real America's Voice, or somebody out there, a congressman, can't think of his name. Great guy, I like listening to him. He finally openly admitted it's not a swamp. A swamp has a purpose. It actually serves its purpose. It's God-given. He didn't say cesspool, but he said sewage. So Congress is sewage. If we can clean out the sewage, we can take care of a lot of problems.
All right, I just give me up. All right.
We have a cesspool. We have a cesspool podcast. I forgot what the guy's name is. I want to make one comment, though. I really would have liked to have asked that. Number one, there is a solution, and those are the solutions. The solution is campaign finance reform, term limits, and no more lobbying until the doors are locked in Washington. They're doing it right in your face now. Lindsey Graham today. Yeah. They don't care. And I don't care who it is. If it's your little favorite guy, Ted Yoho, he's a nice guy. I followed him for years. All these people, Brian Mass, I communicate with, they're all taking money. And I'm sick of the war. You know, I'll tell you, I believe in just war. Just war theory, and that is, an eye for an eye. No, I want to justify the war to me. This is the thing that I have a problem going on right now. I'm done with Ukraine. I'm done with Israel. Yes, you went ahead. Now you got to shoot everybody. We're not going to shoot every Arab. We're not going to do it. It ain't going to happen. We spent all those.
Yep.
Trump is right. Think of all the years we wasted on that, all that money in the Middle East. We never had one bomb, another 9/11 since then.
Yep.
So they sold us on all that nonsense. And now we send money to Israel. And, you know, there's no relationship between Bibi Netanyahu and Donald Trump anymore. But nobody wants to talk about it because nobody wants to speak the truth. So I'm done with all
yeah.
that.
Well,
I'm done with the party. I'm done with the whole Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned, is a farce. And,
oh, they are.
True.
They are.
And they better start talking about it because I believe, this is just my gut's telling me, my gut's telling me that from the local on up, and I mean this, today I got a call from somebody who works really hard in the party. She's done. Call from the chairman 2 days ago. I spoke to Karen about this. She told me it's over. It's so corrupt in Tallahassee. It's a joke. From the guy that used to be the campaign Liberty guy. He has no faith. I mean, all we're doing is, and you know why? Because we're sitting here, we're the activists, and the rest of the people are like working like little busy bees. Oh, I'm making a phone call to so-and-so. Oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. No, then they come home. These elected officials, at least the three that I have here in the state, one of them's on a European vacation. He was broke 3 years ago. It's insane. It's insane.
But
and you know what?
Here's the question.
They're in bed with the not-for-profits. But they're in bed with the not-for-profits. It's like
we know that. Here's the problem that I have, this is where the hope. If we don't get some kind of divine intervention, why I'm not sure what's going to happen. But the challenge, because the elections are corrupt. I mean, you gotta. It's the fox guarding the hen house. How do we get rid of that fox to get the right people in the house so that you can change things? We can't change finance law with the crooks, guarding the bank.
No. I mean, you got it. Who? Tell me on a national level. I'm going to give you a very good example. Dan Bongino lives here. Dan Bongino got on the radio and said, I gave $1,000 to some of these commissioners and they raised my taxes and I'm going to tell them when I do the Lincoln Day dinner. Oh, the chairman of the party calls me up and says, Sheik doesn't have any sponsors for the Lincoln Day dinner because Dan Bongino is going to speak. I'm not going to the Lincoln Day dinner. I don't belong to the party anymore. I'm just friends with her. I've known her for 20 years. That's how it works. This is crazy.
It is crazy.
And these blowhards on the talk radio, why don't they tell the truth? No more campaign finance reform, number one, no more money. Number two, term limits. Number three, just do all that stuff. Just talk about it. Somebody bring it up. How come nobody brings up those three things? We know why.
I do, because I remember.
Okay,
hold on,
one at a time. Okay, Nathan, go and give a quick answer, then Karen.
Okay, I know. I'd bring it up because I remember there was term limits in the contract with America, and they didn't bring that up. The first promise in the contract with America was, we will pass a law that Congress has to live by the same laws the rest of the country did. I don't know where they assumed they were above the law, but it never came up. And I've sent it to Newt Gingrich. I've sent it to a lot of people saying, can anyone produce for me the vote count on this? Okay, but yet they did that in 94. We sat there and watched it lose numbers in 96, 98, the razor-thin election for the president. And you know what? No one wants to hear this, but we're still at it again. And somebody needs to pin these people down and say, I want an answer or I'm not voting for you. Okay?
One person,
I do that. They know where I stand. The people that know of me or know me, they know where I stand, and they also know I'm going to be out here giving my opinion about it. And the thing is They're in control of deciding who, and they got us thinking, listen to talk radio right now. There is no debate. It's just a cheerleading thing to get the people against the Democrats. There is no debate.
Right. It's also the other way around, too. You know, it's Republican
Democrat. The Republicans fighting against themselves, like Joe had to deal with. Karen, I know you were going to say something. Let me go to Karen when we got plenty of time. We can talk.
Actively
Karen.
Republicans.
Well, the fourth thing is the debt. The debt should just be erased. It came in out of thin air, and it should go out of thin air. We don't owe anybody anything. We never asked them to put us in debt.
Yep.
We never agreed for any of this garbage that they're pushing on us. They wanted to print money. Okay, so nice. Now burn it, because who cares? That's the other problem, because they hang the debt over us. Oh, it's a $34 trillion debt. Give me a break. They printed
the
34 trillion pieces of paper. Who cares?
Yep,
and all they did
nothing.
Was
You're
line
right.
their own
nothing.
Pockets with it.
Yep, it's a fake debt.
And then they're selling our land, and they're keeping the money. They're selling our resources, and they're keeping the money. And the only one that even alluded to that was Trump when he said, it was my intention to sell the oil and pay off the debt. Well, that's what really should happen, but I don't believe there is a debt. $34 trillion bullshit in their pocket. I'm sorry. I think we should get rid of the debt by just eliminating it the same way it appears. Be a magician and make it disappear.
Karen, that's the jubilee.
Yes.
That's what the three economists talked about. That's from the – and you know what? They gave a reason why Trump wouldn't do all three, and I can't remember all three of the things that they recommended. Let's just say he did that. He could just do it, erase it. We're done. Everybody's no debt. Start over.
Yep.
Yeah, what can they do? Nothing. Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. Let's be boys and girls about it.
The Federal Reserve, the banksters, are the problem.
Yes.
Yep.
Go take away their money. Make it worthless like they did to us.
Well, we're definitely going to share. I will send out an email to James, and I'll include the contact for the people that are talking right here. Hold on a second. I keep hearing background noise. I'm not sure who's talking, but let me finish this one thing, and then we'll go around the table. Anyway, I'll send an email to James and share the contact here, because it's very obvious when it comes to this Federal Reserve stuff, he doesn't have that experience, which, as he said, you can't know everything, and nobody knows everything kind of stuff, but it's so critical to everything else, so I really hope that we can share some of that information. And you reach out to him individually, whatever, or on the group email, doesn't matter to me. And put some questions or information links, whatever, because I think he wants to do the right thing. If we can help him, then I think that's what we got to do. But we got to somehow get the garbage out of the office, and the garbage that's in there is because of the money, and we got to get past that money and that type of thing. So I'm not sure. Joe, were you starting to say something? I'm sorry. We're trying to go around the table.
No, I'll wait till you do your round table. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I think we can go ahead, and it's almost 9:30. We will go ahead and do the roundtable now. I don't know if you want to have a show afterwards. You can announce anything, but Joe, go ahead and put your final comments. Let people know about your campaign update, and if you're going to have another show tonight, whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah, I may do one in a little while here. Just a small show. Depends on the callers who calls in. I don't know. There's a lot, too much information out there to share, but it's also to hammer in the key points and stay focused because. Excuse me. We get distracted so easily. Stay focused, like the other lady was saying there. You know, look, there's key issues here that we have to stay focused upon. You know, all that other crap doesn't matter. You know, we can argue and fight and conspiracy theory and all that. Just stay focused on the main issues, you know. And one of the main issues I fight for is the monetary system, the Federal Reserve. You know, the banking banksters, you know. We fix that. A lot of the other stuff will be fixed because there'll be no more money to play with. So, you know, I believe that guy was running for office. I believe he's got a good heart. But I can see he's very susceptible to being corrupted because he doesn't know a lot about a lot of things, which is okay. You know, everybody can't know everything. But, Sal, you said, some key issues he has to know about. These representatives have to know about these things. So that's it. Thank you. God bless the Republic. And, yeah, I am still running here in North Carolina. I beat the state. I'm still on the ballot. They ain't getting me off. And so far, I think we did me and a couple other people did a little independent poll out of 200 callers, and I'm only losing by 6. So 6 points ain't too bad, you know, so I can make that up.
Yeah, yes, definitely. Okay, well, good luck with that, and we're with you. Thank goodness you got past that other nonsense they were trying to pour on you. So, okay,
yeah, thank
well,
you.
Thank you again. Yep, and okay, after that, Cindy, what are your last words for the wrap-up here?
Okay, so I'm on Twitter right now, and if we had, I mean, if people would stop with the sensation, you know, the talking points of the talk show host mafia, okay? And I'm going to say that plainly because there are very few talk show hosts that tell you anything to do. Most of them just feel all this stuff out and look at for years. Rush Limbaugh, it's a very good example. God rest his soul. But he never told anybody to do anything. You know, I mean, what the hell? So I'm going to say it. Get online, get on Twitter. If you can, get on Getter, get on Truth Social, and say, we want campaign finance reform. Why? Because it's corrupt. Take the money out of politics. What we want, term limits. No more lobbying. Until we the people, and I hear that also, we the people. Well, we've been to Washington many times. We the people should be up in Washington and standing by the door and say, who are you? Oh, you're the lobbyist? Why are you here? That's what needs to happen. We're done. This is over. We're not going to fix it because you cannot fix. I mean, look, Matt Gaetz goes up there and talks about not taking any of that money. He seems to get his voice out. Why aren't there more of them? I don't know why. You know, I've looked at his record. I mean, I looked. He's not taking any big money. So it can happen. It's just that they're not going to do it because they've been getting away with it and no one cares. And the people don't know. They're on Twitter talking about dumb stuff, the border. Yeah, we already know about the border. The truckers are going down to the border. So that's the sensation of the week until next week, and then it'll be another thing without truly talking about what's really corrupt. And what's sad about this, and I'm going to shut my mouth, this is on a state level and on a local level. The local level are in bed with the not-for-profits. It's all cronyism. It's money with all of these developers. It's disgusting. And we're running candidates against it, but it is a disgrace. They have ruined Martin County. As one of the people from the Liberty Caucus told me today on the phone, it is a disgrace and it's broken. The state house is done. They don't work for us. They're passing a bill for crying out loud. If I sue because of my drainage and I lose, I'll have to pay the government's lawyers. That's another bill that they're doing. Think about that. And why is that bill put up there? You know why? Because they don't want the environmentalists suing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the environmentalists may be right because they are ruining Florida, and our biggest problem is going to be water. There's not any land left. So there's my famous last word. Sorry to be so glum. I'm not glum about it. I'm just being a realist. Thank you.
Realist. Yep, exactly. Hey, it's all good. It's not good in the fact that it's not cheerful, but you're being honest, and this is where we really are. We have to face the truth. The truth will set us free if we will face it. Trying to get everybody to face it is another story. Okay, Nathan, what are your final words there for tonight?
My final words is as the way I view things, I see it as black and white, and like she just said, you know, none of them are really telling us what to do. Rush Limbaugh did tell somebody what to do. He had people in certain states, some of his ditto heads, switch from Republican to Democrat to vote for Hillary and then switch back to Republican so that we could get Hillary because they knew that he knew and we all knew that he can't beat, Obama can't beat Hillary, but and can't he can he they wanted Hillary because she would be easier to beat. Now here's what my frustration is. I quit listening to him other than for study purposes. Rush Limbaugh just committed a crime by saying what the Republicans have always said the Democrats would do if there's not an electoral college. They would switch parties, vote for this guy, and then switch back to win theirs. And you know, I just see it as it is, black and white, and a lot of people don't like to hear that. and I don't, I miss out being a part of helping find a solution. But I think that what I'm pointing to is the solution is we need to stop all this corruption. We need to stop picking this guy here because he's better than that one. That's all I got to say about me, and maybe that's my flaw.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Nathan. And you and I have had many discussions on this, and it was something about in reference to voting your conscience. At times you try to imply that others don't vote their conscience, which I don't think is really too fair. In my own case, I don't like either parties. I don't like any parties. I said that tonight. I've said it for the past umpteen years. I'm an NPA as much as I can possibly be, but right now, because I feel I need to support Trump, even though it's all superficial in many ways. It's a primary, as we know, here in Florida. The electors, all the garbage there, which I talked about earlier, it's all a scam in so many ways. But I'm going to go ahead and attempt to vote and cast that vote for Trump because I do support him being the next president. I'm not sure what will happen with this country if he's not there. So I know in many ways
too.
I know you do, because of what he's done in the past, and he's taken the bullets. He's done the George Washington thing, taken the bullets, and he's still standing. So I'm going to do that. So I have, but unfortunately, here in the state of Florida, for me to do that, I have to register as a Republican. It's a disgusting thing. I want to puke. I want to barf, and I have to go wash my hands off and whatever. It's all so disgusting that I have to do that. But that's the only way I'm going to get to say, at least in a public forum, to say, yes, I support Trump for the next president, even though deep down I know that's not how he's going to get elected.
Well,
I think it might have.
You know,
yeah, go
Sally,
ahead.
There's a phrase we keep hearing. We've heard it. I hear a lot of people say it when situations come up. I heard it at work from one guy. And when something's going on, I hear this, well, it is what it is. And I responded, because I keep thinking about that, and I responded to one guy saying it is what it is, and I said, yeah, but it ain't the way it's supposed to be. We need to do something.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's totally true. Right now, if you could tell me, well, Sally, if you will go over here and sign this document over here, sign this, just whatever else, we will get that thing changed before the primary comes up. We'll get it changed. If you can tell me how I can make myself. So, I mean, it is what it is. Sometimes it's a cop-out answer. Sometimes it's the reality. Just like the finance, the corruption there. That is the reality, trying to change it. If you can tell me exactly what I myself can do to make a change, I will do that. Right now, it's not just me. That's the sad part.
You might not
be
able to change it, but you might not be able to change it, but you can call it that it ain't what it ain't. It ain't what it is. Like we all did tonight, we called in and disagreed or told a disagreement, if not with your guest, but everybody had something that they didn't like, and that's what I'm saying. Tell it like it is. And there's people that get kind of moan and make noise and would rather you just shut up, and they maybe know what you're going to say, or maybe they just don't want to hear whatever. They don't even know what you're going to say. They just don't want to hear it because they got their own stuff in their own mind. Here's what I'm saying.
Don't confuse me with the facts.
Get people to think.
Yeah. Well, yes. And,
we don't think alike, but just make us think.
Yes. Okay, Nathan. Don't confuse me with the facts. That's what I hear. And, I mean, I know people who are diehard Democrats who – If you take away the politics and you were talking to them, you would think they were a good Christian person. It was kind of interesting saying, how can you be a Christian and a Democrat at the same time? That's another story. But that you had this totally different image of them. All of a sudden, you talk about politics, and all of a sudden, they are so addicted and so hooked to that party that it doesn't matter what Joe Biden has done. They're going to vote for him again because he's a Democrat. I can't get past their mindset. I do my best, and I said I want one of these people that I know. I shouldn't say that I know, but I want someone who's so diehard for Biden to come on here and tell me why Biden has made your life so wonderful. How is he a better solution than Trump or anybody else or Robert F. Kennedy, whatever? How is he a better choice? But they'll never do it because they can't explain it. They are so addicted to being brainwashed by whatever this party says, whatever, they drink the Kool-Aid. I don't know. It can't be explained. So you got that people out there with that weird mindset. Don't confuse them with the facts. I'm not a person not confusing me with the facts. Okay, go ahead and say one more thing, Nathan, then we got to go because we're running out of time, and Taryn still has some comments. So, Nathan, go ahead and finish your last line here, and then I got to go.
I agree with what you just said, but what about the other side that says we're going to do this and don't do it and don't answer why they didn't do it? Which is worse, the guy that's up there saying that he doesn't believe in God and we need to do this, this, and this, and that just totally shocks us? We're supposed to say, okay, I can't believe that, but what about the guy that says I'm going to do this and don't do it and does what the other guy did?
I'm not going to even attempt to try to totally understand that at this point in time in the show because I'm running out of time. But the fact is, we people have the ethics, integrity, decency, Christianity, core beliefs, whatever. It goes back a lot to what James was saying about the evilness, why this is a spiritual war, probably more so than some of the others. And I agree, when you have no culture, and we've talked many times on this show, it's the destruction of the culture is where this all started. What was Saul Alinsky and Clarence Piven? They were all about taking down the culture. You've got to change the attitude of people. You've got to ruin it from the inside out. So this is the mindset. When you've gone and corrupted the mind, trying to undo generations and generations of brainwashing and corruption and wait a minute, you got to think straight. Wait a minute, how many years of college have you had? And you can't see some of this? What part of this are you not following? What part did they not tell you how to connect any dots in college? I guess not, because it's pretty obvious on some of this. It's really not rocket science to see this. The corruption, it's so kind of weird that way. But the point being that the fact of the matter is, you can go to this other example. I totally disagree with the crap they're pulling with these tabulators saying that we don't have the right to have a manual count. I'm pretty sure by the Constitution I can say we do have the right because we're supposed to be able to witness the count. We don't witness anything in a machine that's controlled by somebody else and can be hacked in every different way. But right now, here in the state of Florida, this is what they're trying to do. We've got these Republicans, again, the scumbuckets that you say they are. No argument there. And right now, I don't know how many people are in public office today that I voted for. I don't think there's many that are there in public office. But this is what they're doing. The question is, do I not, because of what they're doing with these tabulators and the manual count, and I see how squirrely it is, should I not cast a vote at all? Does that mean I should not vote? Because I know the system's corrupt, so I just don't do anything. I sit here and watch it. Because me by myself, I can call and write, and I can ban whatever, which I've been doing. But how do I support? I object to what they're doing, so I stand on the sideline and watch them. But I'm still going to go vote. There's plenty of people who say I'm not voting because the system's corrupted. Blah 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 blah.
It's all corrupted.
Exactly. I got to hold my nose.
Bring the clothespin with you.
I'm gonna. There's that stuff that you can sell about poop or potpourri. When I go there, I'm gonna take the poop potpourri.
And they ask, I'm wearing my mask because I'm voting for these turds that I have to vote for because there are no real people. That's what you do.
Exactly.
No, but I'll tell you how bad it is. Do you know who Joe Negron was? Joe Negron was your Senate president.
Oh, yeah.
Now, guess what Joe did today? I heard this today. Little Joey went to Bible school in Hope Sound, grew up, married a girl who came from a preacher family. They had two children. He became very involved in the Republican Party. He became a state rep. Nice guy. Used to say, I'm more of a libertarian. Then he ran for the Congress when the guy got caught going after an aide, the gay guy. I can't remember the name of the congressman. He was very popular. He lost. He then became the Senate president. Now he works for one of the biggest law firms coming out of Tallahassee. It's not Gunster. I can't think of the name. Now he goes to a church, and this is from somebody that goes to this church who's had enough. Him and his wife, first of all, his wife sat on the school board. They're both going to run for Congress now. Why would you do that? They have more money than God. They live in Hope Sound in a gated community that is very high end. I'm talking like where the Blue Bloods live, the Bushes, all right? And now they're going to run for Congress? And she's had it, and she's had it with the church because the preacher's there. Kissed her ass. Is that a good way to put it? You know, like nobody's questioning it. They're all going to just get in line. That's how crazy it is. That's why cronyism is at its best.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I'm going to throw one other comment out there as we were talking about some of this. I did hear just recently that Robert F. Kennedy may run as a libertarian, so that's a whole other thing going on. But we're running out of time, and I haven't given Karen hardly any time, so Karen, go for it. Dear Lord, help us. Dear Lord, help us. I say that more and more. Dear Lord, help us. Anyway, go ahead, Karen.
Dear Lord, help us is right. The only thing that we fail to understand is that we think they're like us. We think they have feelings. We think that they are, they believe in people. They don't believe in anything. They're psychopaths. They're they are totally devoid of emotion. They don't care about human beings. They don't care about anything except themselves. And some of the people on the lower rung, they might feel that there are consequences for their actions, but the people on top, they don't care. And the only thing that's going to solve anything is what we've been talking about, which is withholding the money. And until the people, you want to get rid of the public schools, you want the public schools to pay attention, don't send your kids to public school. It's very simple. And that's the problem. The people don't want to do it. You don't like that Walmart is giving money to the NGOs, who's giving money to the illegals to come here to destroy our country. Stop going to Walmart. People don't do that because they're so entrenched and they don't think. They don't even know either. So we're only dealing with about 15% of the people that actually know what's going on. And half of those people don't care. And until we understand and learn how to fight against the psychopath that doesn't care, that doesn't feel that there are any consequences for their actions, it's not going to make any difference. And until we're willing to make them have consequences for their actions, it's not going to matter. So if you're a Democrat, you can go out and you can do whatever you want. You can destroy a city. You can kill whatever, because your elite don't care. And they're happy that you're doing that because it fits their MO. They don't want you to have anything anyway. And when they do give you something, they want you to be on the begging end. Oh, could I please have that? Could I please, please, Mr. Government, please give me, give me, give me. That's all they care about. And until we understand that and understand who we're fighting, you can't fight them, because we're trying to be rational and they are irrational. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, what have they picked? Global warming, CO2 is the enemy. Well, without CO2, we're all dead. So why would we want to eliminate CO2? You can't. But it's a never-ending thing. It's a never-ending battle. It's just give me more time, give me more money. And until we are big boys and big girls enough to say, no more money, we're done, we're finished, we're not giving you anything, we're finished, take your paper dollars and go shove them, then it's not going to make any difference. Until we say, we don't care about your bank that's too big to fail, because it's not too big to fail. We want you to fail. Fail. We'll work with small banks. Until we stop doing that, nothing is going to change. And this is the problem that we are at right now. And unfortunately, not enough people are in pain yet to understand what they really have to do to solve the problem. And yes, Cindy is right. It's term limits. It's lobbying out. Getting the money out of the political arena, but until the people are ready, willing, and able to withhold the money, nothing is going to change. So we're on a never-ending spiral loop that that unfortunately is going down, and we haven't hit the bottom yet. Look at the stock market. That's what you said, Sally. Why are these people, ask them what Joe Biden has done? Well, he's made the stock market go higher, so I'm making more money. So they don't care. They don't care about the rest of us in inflation because they got their money invested. Look at what they're making in Congress. Look at how much money they're making. Care? They're making money. Joe Biden's a good guy. I didn't make money under Trump. I made it under Biden.
Well, this kind of let me put something in there too. And this was something where I'm sure we've talked about it at some point in the past, but it was Glenn Beck was talking a little bit about last Friday on his weekly wrap up thing he does. But it was the whole thing, which is the everything to do with global warming and all this, and including the pandemic routine. It's a head game. There's been a massive head game that's allowed this to happen. And the way he put it, he said, first they nudge you, then they push you, then they shoot you. Mm-hmm. They were started nudging us. Of course, they started nudging us a long time ago, but he was talking more like the early 2005, 2006, whatever. And then they've been nudging and nudging. They keep giving you the brainwashing. The climate's all about brainwashing. Because most of us at one point were actually taught that people had some decency, but these people took an oath to uphold the Constitution and to defend and to protect and all this other stuff, and of course they don't. So, but they play these head games. Well, we need to do this to help these people. We need all the brainwashing. We have to somehow do the brainwashing the other way around. We got to start brainwashing and by telling the truth. We're deprogramming, whatever you want to call it. These people who are so willing to drink all the Kool-Aid. Stop drinking the Kool-Aid. And I think that's, the ultimate example is you're drinking the Kool-Aid. It's all the brainwashing, and they're going to kill you in the process. They're going to destroy you. They're going to destroy you because you keep drinking the Kool-Aid. How do we start deprogramming, as you said, until they feel enough pain? They're going to have to suffer enough before they say, well, wait a minute, why is this happening? And those of us who, do our best to not buy anything from China, it's next to impossible, but I do my best to not buy anything made in China, and all these other things that are out there happening, how we can push back. I do as much as I can to buy made in America, the USA companies, and all those stuff. I try to do all those kind of things. But it does cost more money, and it takes work to do it because it's not easy. It's not out there. But we have to change this mentality. That's the part that is so troubling to me, trying to undo the damage. That's, and then we have a chance. I don't know. That's how do you get past that? Yeah, go ahead.
The only way to do that and to undo the damage is starting with education. And until we change what's going on in the schools or take our kids out of the public schools, we have no chance because the next generation is dumber and the next generation is going to be even dumber.
Yes.
And so on
but
down the line.
We don't have another generation.
We don't have another generation because they're so stupid.
Let me interrupt real quick here and then I'll stop and then we're going to be wrapping up here pretty soon. But I keep hoping the electric vehicles wake up a few people. I mean, you're stuck in the snow.
Okay,
you have no heat in the car. You can't run the heat because it destroys the batteries. You would think the electric vehicle thing would wake up a few people. You're drinking the Kool-Aid, people, the EV Kool-Aid. Have you figured it out yet? If I can't figure it out, I don't know what else we can do.
I agree with you, but look at that. Look at the headline that I just read. The auto manufacturers are now giving into the green and they're making more EVs. So tell me they have reached that spot of no return yet. They haven't reached that spot.
Well,
the
government gave more money.
The pain is not severe enough. They're getting more money. They're getting more money again. They're printing money and then they're going to tell us we owe that money. Screw you. We don't owe that money. You printed it. You did something with it.
I think that's probably one of the best examples. I don't want the EV. You're forcing the EV. I'm not going to buy the EV, which comes back to the ultimate, how many people can truly self-sustain without having to deal with any of this stuff? If you're able to self-sustain without ever having a car, you can survive without transportation and all these other things so that you can truly say, I'm not getting an EV no matter what they do, and then I'm not going to pay for the government to pay for them to make EVs that I don't want. Because that's where it all kind of comes around. Yeah.
But that all goes back to common sense, and there isn't any. And until you get to the spot where we bring back common sense, then that will turn around. In the meantime, look at who's running this country. I mean, the people that are running this country are complete idiots, because it's bad enough that the top is telling them to do it, but it's worse that they're actually doing it. And the only good thing that I saw out of all of this was that the Border Patrol agent said they're not going to follow Biden's orders and cut the wire. Okay, so they've got the wire going up in Texas. In the meantime, the people are now going to Arizona and California. They're not going to stop. So it's a cycle, and the only way to stop a cycle is to break it. And the only way to break it, what's the biggest problem that we have, is lack of common sense. These people cannot think. And until we can get back to the spot where we have people that can think and can withhold the money, then nothing is going to change. If we really, really, truly want to fix the public schools, the parents would stop sending their kids. They know the schools are bad. They know the kids are not learning anything, but they're addicted to sending their kids to school. How does that make any sense? It doesn't. And again, you go back to there's no sense.
Unfortunately, I think some of these younger parents probably do think that the transgender education stuff is good, which is kind of sick. But yeah, we got to pull them out. And this kind of goes back to what I proposed years ago. I proposed this years ago. If I had the money to do the massive advertising, maybe Trump would be able to do something. I don't know, whatever. But we truly need to have the American people, not the wackos that are out there doing this transgender nutsy stuff, because there's really not that many of them, and they have way too much power. Just say, no, we totally shut down everything. But you got to get that person who has that government job, who's afraid of losing that job, are they willing to say, no, I'm not going to do this? Trying to get them to think of the greater good. We hear about collectivism all the time. What about the greater good of this country? If we would all just say, hey, you know what? We're not doing it. We're not doing it. And then you could really make a difference.
No country. Okay, now go back to they don't care. There is no country. So they don't care. So that's the problem, and it's up to us, we the people, and that's the sad part. So right now, what is it? There's 0.06% of the population that believes in the transgender garbage, and yet it's ruling the world, and you have to say the right pronouns and all that garbage. We should be saying, no, screw you. What about my feelings?
But it's all the fascism. The fascism of pushing it through the corporations down to the people at the jobs. And when it comes to common sense,
the corporation is now laying off people, and the corporation should be, if the people had any backbone at all, they would be saying no. And that's the problem. So what is it, 5%? You need really 5% of the people to be engaged totally, so maybe we're getting there, and that would be a good thing. And maybe the truckers, that would be a good thing, because it has to be visible, and I did see some good things.
Exactly. I am so looking forward. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to what these truckers are doing. And going back to the common sense, I don't know who came up with the phrase, came up with it years ago. It's only common sense, but sense isn't common.
That's also true. But the other good thing is I'm hearing now a lot more songs. That was the one thing in the 60s when they were talking about Vietnam, all of a sudden there's a song about the war. There were multiple songs. There were songs about the government.
Okay.
There were songs about everything. We didn't have that. And now it's beginning, and that was refreshing.
And on that note,
On that note, we have to wrap it up because we are down to like 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to try to play a little bit of the Trump train here at the very end, but we won't get too far. Excellent discussion. Like I said, I'll send out that contact information. Didn't mean to cut you off, but we truly are out of time here. The hard – what are they all to say on the – hard commercial break, hard break, whatever. We're getting cut off here. great discussion. I'll send the contact information.
I have one little short one. This one I heard yesterday. I thought this was terrific. This was from Sean Lennon, John Lennon's son, and he said, DEI – is dumb, evil, idiot. I thought that was very good.
So true. We would pass that along, everybody. Dumb, evil, idiots. Okay, I like that one. Thank you again for the discussion. Please spread the word. It's up to us. We're the ones who have to do it. Be good to each other, and God bless America. Dear Lord, help us. May God bless America. And I'm going to attempt to play a little bit of this Trump train. We'll see how far it goes.
Make it great. Come on. Join the Trump train. Trump.